Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, welcome to this Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Conversation Radio. It's Conversation Radio at its finest because it's just about the only conversation radio there is. Nothing quite like it anywhere else. As I said, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, an evening for little weirdnesses and things that make you go, ow, and make you want to run screaming into the night, tearing your hair out by the roots and ripping your clothes off as you go. Figuratively speaking, of course. So I'm looking forward to a lot of great conversation this evening. That, of course, is entirely your responsibility as we get the evening's programming underway. As we came home this evening, the neighbor's dogs met us in the driveway, as they always do. They're a pair of jolly Labrador retrievers, one black, one chocolate, trying to jump into the car, pure love. And I just looked at Agnes and said, oh my God, we're the Bumpuses. Remember the Bumpuses? Remember that magnificent little film, A Christmas Story with Darren McGavin?
No, they did not get the turkey. And I love you, sis. Come back to us soon.
We are the Bumpuses. Yeah, we are. Bumpuses! But we haven't, but they're not our dogs. We just love them, that's all. And so they sit around waiting for us to pull into the driveway, and even if we don't have any doggy snacks for them. By the way, doggy snacks, Thorn in the Side Thursday, right? Jeebus. So, no, they're not our dogs, but we'll bring home, they're the next door neighbor's neglected dogs. Bless his heart, the black one has more lives than a cat, because he has been run over several times. The first time he was run over, Ferg saved his life. And he doesn't walk real good, but he gets it for what he's been through. He does pretty doggone well. But we'll bring home snacks and treats and bacon, 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 you know. But this is America, where we can't make any of our own stuff. Right? Lord God, it's just frustrating. Oh, yes, yes, Marty. An Agnes sighting. Hey, Agnes, you're missed. Yes, I know. You all like Agnes better than me. I know that. She knows that. Let's try not to rub it in so early on Thorn in the Side Thursday. Could we? No, doggy treats. No, this is not the most engaging or most pressing or most critical story of the evening. My goodness gracious, heavy-hitting, well-paid, highly powerful, impressive, respected talk show hosts around the land of the progressive stripe have probably expostulated on the more important stories all day long. Right? Yeah. But, and we'll get to some of them. Really, really, we will. But there's just... I thought about this, and I wanted to mention it to you because so many of you have so much love and kindness and compassion for the animal people in your life. Because, you know, animals are people, too, in the grand scheme of this whole planetary mix-up in which we're all involved. I had a video last night that was sent to me that I shared around to a few folks. Just a magnificent video of the planet. And it said, she's alive and she's hurting. And, of course, we're all part of it. And so are the doggies and the kitty cats and the birds and the fishies. But remember, no matter how dear you may hold that four-legged loved one in your world, this is America. And since this is America, that means that your four-legged friend or two-footed avian friend or your fish or your boa constrictor or your tarantula, whatever it is, they are all part of the great, grand, ever-expanding, massive, advanced capitalist scheme. Everybody exists for the purpose of creating profit for our corporate overlords, no matter the price. And so it is that I felt a sense of concern that I share with you something that has come out from the FDA. Yeah, you know, that government interfering, states' rights defeating, overregulating FDA. Now they're feeling so powerful over under that Kenyan Muslim and with the anti-colonialist tendencies with a deep-seated hatred of white people. They're feeling so powerful now that they're regulating. The FDA is regulating the pet food. And what for? What for? By God, old Spot, old Blue, old always done just fine with the table scraps we give them. And it's true. It's true. It's true that old Blue always did do okay with the table scraps and so forth. But old Blue is a part of the capital stream of profit and commerce now. And old Blue may just have to die for profit's sake. The Food and Drug Administration is again cautioning consumers that chicken jerky products for dogs, also sold as chicken tenders, strips, or treats, may be associated with illness in dogs. In the last 12 months, the FDA has seen an increase in the number of complaints it received of dog illnesses associated with consumption of chicken jerky products, and here's where the profit motive comes in, imported from China. Remember last night in that conversation with David from Maine how I was talking about how our world isn't just becoming unsustainable, it's unsustainable right now? Remember that? Yeah, I thought so. We actually, and it really does, it just makes me want to just bang my little forehead on the desktop here, thusly. Yeah, that's my little noggin banging on the desktop. We are such a sadly, pathetically, profit-driven, globalized society that there is not a single corner in the United States where apparently we can manufacture chicken jerky treats for dogs. It has to be done in China. And of course, the chicken jerky treats coming from China are what? Yes! Poison! Poison to your little pooch. Come here, sweetheart. You want a little treat? What's the matter, Flash? Yeah. Because if in no place on planet Earth does the profit motive and the capitalist urge to make a profit at not at all cost, but or at any cost. Nowhere on this planet does that notion reign more supreme than in the sort of stream of commerce space between here and the so-called People's Republic of China, which now is about as communist as Newt Gingrich. Right? Yeah. Because, see, in the name of profit, they cut corners in China. They cut corners, and instead of putting ground-up chicken nasty parts, the nasty parts that they're not putting in our hot dogs, Soylent Green is Fido! That's two nights with a Soylent Green reference. Instead of putting nasty ground-up chicken parts and bone meal that'll give them mad cow disease or whatever, no, you're going to get a little Prestone, a little antifreeze maybe, a little melamine. And here's the fun part. This is just the latest warning. November 2011. The warnings have been going out since September 2007. There was a preliminary animal health notification in December of 2008. See there? That's what happens when you got your overarching, overreaching, overregulating, states' rights violating, liberal, socialist, democratic, communist in charge of your government. Out there wasting taxpayer dollars making sure that people's dogs don't die. That ain't no fitting thing for a government to be doing. I'm sure that none of them framers of the Constitution was sitting around there thinking, you know what, we need to come up with a government that'll keep a feller's hunting dogs from getting killed. That's personal responsibility is what that is, and we got a country ain't taking no personal responsibility anymore. Got a FDA out there looking out for poison in doggy treats. Lord, what's this? What's this cover? It's come till, my God Almighty. It's sitting in. Ayn Rand is probably a rolling in her grave. Preliminary animal health notification, December of 2008. And then the complaints dropped off a little bit. And now it's back on the upsurge again. The FDA is advising consumers who choose to feed their dogs chicken jerky products to watch their dogs closely for any or all of the following signs that may occur within hours to days of feeding the products. Decreased appetite, decreased activity, vomiting, diarrhea, don't you just love it when I do these stories during the dinner hour? Decreased appetite, decreased activity, vomiting, diarrhea, sometimes with blood, increased water consumption, and or increased urination. If the dog shows any of these signs, stop feeding the chicken jerky product. What? Now, right there is the action of the profit margin in our wholly and utterly bought off and subsidized, profit-driven, capitalized, alleged government of the people. You see, what you do... FDA is advising consumers who choose to feed their dogs chicken jerky... They just told us that the chicken jerky makes your damn dog sick! And then but, knowing that, if you still want to give Sparky the chicken jerky products containing the toxic garbage from China, well, here's what you watch for, so that you can make sure that you really know that little Fido's going for the last roundup. You know why that is? Because somewhere on K Street in Washington, D.C., there is very likely an American International Doggy Snack Treat Association. And the American International Doggy Snack Treat Association has a bunch of high-paid lobbyists who knock on doors in the House of Representatives And, excuse me, I think I got some chicken jerky stuck in my throat. Wasn't supposed to be no bones in it. And they knock on doors in the Senate and the House of Representatives, and they go knock on doors at the FDA, and they say, hello, I am from the American International Chicken Jerky Dog Treat Association. It would be deleterious to our business. And, you know, we're job creators at the American International Chicken Jerky Dog Treat Association. We're job creators. And if you just tell people not to eat our poisonous products, or, well, you know how it is with grannies sometimes. If you tell them not to give their dogs our treats, well, that'll put Americans out of work. Horse feathers. It'll mean that the CEO of Chicken Jerky International only gets a $2 million bonus this year, around this time, instead of a $5 million bonus. And Jesus, you know, when it's like that, he might have to give up lobster for breakfast. The 1% does not care if your beloved companion animal, your pet, your friend, your family member dies, as long as they make a profit. Because Christianity is not the religion of the United States. Capitalism is. Profit is. Oh, yes, Lord, yes. Yes, it is. So, yeah, the pups showed up at the door, and we scratched them on the heads and behind their ears. And I thought about some executive sitting somewhere in the United States who would be just fine if those two fine, loyal, loving animals keeled over dead, as long as he made his profit on them as they went about the business of their ending. So, chicken jerky treats. Owners should consult their veterinarian if signs are severe or persist for more than 24 hours. Blood tests may indicate kidney failure. Urine tests may indicate Fanconi syndrome, increased glucose. Although most dogs appear to recover, some reports to the FDA have involved dogs that have died. Just, you know what, never mind the business about if you still want to give them chicken jerky. Just don't give your doggy chicken jerky treats. Just don't do it. Because, well, you love them, don't you? Yeah. So just that one little thought, as we, move into Thorn in the Side Thursday. I got a feeling it's going to be a busy night. A very, very busy night. By the way, a story from last night about Apple's Siri application. Apple has responded. They said that this, according to the New York Times blog, Apple said Wednesday that Siri's apparent inability to retrieve information about abortion clinics and women's health services in some areas was not intentional or deliberate. The company attributed the problem to kinks in the product that are still being ironed out. Siri is officially still a beta or test product, even though they are damned well charging a full-on retail price for their beta test project bearing latest incarnation of the iPhone. Our customers want to use Siri to find out all types of information, and while it can find a lot, it doesn't always find what you want. That, according to Natalie Karras, a spokeswoman for Apple, in a phone interview late on Wednesday with the New York Times. These are not intentional omissions meant to offend anyone. It simply means that as we bring Siri from beta to final product, we find places where we can do better, and we will in the coming weeks. There's only one problem, and that is they still haven't addressed the fact that in some instances Siri did send women making queries of Siri to so-called pregnancy crisis counseling centers. We've discussed those in the past. There were a couple in North Carolina, and you know, they're phony baloney. There's not a doctor on site. There's no medical supervision. It's just a bunch of Christians helping women not to have an abortion. One investigation having documented, for instance, the women or the people in the crisis pregnancy counseling centers in North Carolina who told a woman who she was a plant. She walked in and along the way just sort of dropped mention of the fact that she was Jewish and said, "Well, you know what? What you really need is to get saved. You need to accept Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior." So, no answer from Apple on why it's driving, why in some instances Siri is driving or attempting to drive women to these phony baloney, bogus, faked up, rubed up, dummied up, ginned up, frauded up crisis pregnancy counseling centers. Ugh. So, it goes on and on and on. And then, what would Thorn in the Side Thursday be without a little trip to Alabamistan? Yeah, Alabamistan. Because it's happened again. Beaner Base, this here's Beaner One. I've got a funny looking person who ain't white and ain't got proper papers on them. What do you want me to do there, Beaner Base? Beaner One, this is Beaner Base. Take them into custody. Really? A second foreign auto worker has been charged under HB 56, Alabama's vicious, hate-filled, prejudice-laden, utterly bigoted immigration law. This one wasn't a German person. This one was a Japanese person. From Honda. Beaner Base, this is Beaner One. I don't know what to do with this feller. I done give him a ticket. Because you see, police had set up a roadblock in Alabamistan and ticketed the individual. Because his paper... Beaner Base, this is Beaner One. His papers are not in order. Repeat, his papers ain't in order, y'all. According to the Associated Press, the man had a valid Japanese passport and an international driver's license on his person. Beaner Base, this is Beaner One. What in the wide, wide world of sports is an international driver's license? This here's Alabama, daggummit, and I ain't seeing no crimson Alabama across the top of this here driver's license. What? I don't understand, Beaner Base. I need some guidance here. Might need some backup. Over. No, really. What papers? I mean, the Honda executives or the Honda employees' paperwork consisted of a passport issued by the nation of Japan, presumptively including a United States visa. issued by the United States Department of State.
Beaner Base, this is Beaner 1. I see this here Visa thing in here. Don't say nothing about no MasterCard. It appears to be issued by that federal government in Washington, D.C., up there where that one's in our White House. Beaner Base, what do I do? Beaner 1, issue a ticket. Do not, repeat, do not take him into custody. Do not take him into custody.
What more papers? What other kind of papers can this individual have? Oh, by the way, for those right wing conservatives out there, all concerned about job creators. Yeah. The Japanese Honda plant is in Talladega County, Alabama, and they employ 4,000 people at that factory just last week, and it may have been part of the reason that that strange fellow with the strange accent and the strange driver's license and the strange passport and the that federal visa.
Beaner Base, this is Beaner 1. Ain't we got a right to run him in? I mean, we ain't got to follow them federal laws, do we? Can't we nullify him? Over.
Yeah, really. $300 million Honda just announced that they will further invest in the plant. You know what? If I'm Japanese, if I'm the Honda folks back home, I'm canceling that $300 million, and I'm packing up the plant and moving somewhere, got some civilization about it, and getting the hell out of Alabamistan that is run by the Christian Taliban. Apparently, I'm not the only person to have this idea. A newspaper in Missouri suggested that Mercedes-Benz there in Tuscaloosa County needed to pull up stakes and move its investment to the show-me state, not the show-me-your-papers state. Ooh, they'll be here all week. Try the veal. Don't forget to tip your waiter. Charges were dropped against the Mercedes executive. No word on whether the ticket issued to the Honda employee will be dropped.
This has got to be embarrassing. This has got to be unbearable. Corporations can't like this. I understand that from, for instance, conversations with our good friend Robert in Japan about how, you know, take one for the team Japanese corporate employees are, and how dedicated and devoted and occasionally suicidal. But there's no way that you're going to get the notice from the home office saying, hey, Noboru, yeah, buddy, you're moving to Talladega, Alabama. Down there, no way. And Noboru is going to go, okay, boss. You got a wife, you got kids, and you know that the minute you set foot there, with your not pasty skin, that you, your wife, and your children are going to be tormented. That's okay, boss. You fire me, I'm going to go to work for Suzuki. They ain't got no plant in Alabamistan.
Meanwhile, Republican state senators and so forth in Alabama are running around saying things like, you know what? I think our law needs some tweaking. Need to tweak it a little bit. Call me crazy, but I have a feeling that the damn thing was drafted by people who were tweaking in the first place, if you know what I mean.
Do Oh, look, it's an email from our buddy Robert in Japan. Bob, now, you do realize you are in a police state. Do not make a joke about the flipping police dog. Read all about it. Oh, please, no. Yep. Chestertown, Maryland, Dateline, Associated Press. Picked up by the Mainichi Daily News in Japan. A man in a Frosty the Snowman costume was arrested Saturday in Maryland during the annual Christmas parade in Chestertown on Maryland's eastern shore. He's accused of scuffling with police and kicking at a police dog. Sergeant John A. Dalgus tells the Star Democrat of Easton that 52-year-old Kevin Michael Walsh became agitated when a dog-handling officer tried to escort him away from the crowd. Walsh told the Associated Press that he is dressed as Frosty in the parade for at least 10 years. He says he did nothing wrong and was wrongfully arrested. He says an officer hassled him after he made a joke about the police dog's presence at the parade. Really? They rousted Frosty the Snowman for making an unkind remark about the dog? Well, Jesus, it wasn't like he was offering him chicken jerky snacks now, was it? Of course, in the American police state, that would probably be an attempted cop killer, wouldn't it? Because the dogs are commissioned law enforcement officers just like any of our other boys in blue. Well, thank God for Democrats like Mary Landrieu and Blanche Manchin and Jesus, that whole filthy list of them that got read out on the air last night on Malloy, who voted to support the indefinite detention without the access to recourse to law or nothing that was recently dealt with in the Senate. Yeah, Frosty needs to go to the gulag. It's getting just a little bit frightening. Oh, thanks, Marty. Personal foul, abuse of the desk, bang in the head, foul on the host, 15 yards, loss of down, fourth down. Marty, I gotta tell you, real hosts don't punt. Ray writing in, any changes, Spot? Actually, having worked in meat processing, says Ray, often dogs are put in dog food. Likewise with cats. Fido and Fluffy are eating them. Well, that just makes me wonder even more what's in the Chinese chicken jerky treats. Mother McCree. Oh, there's the thorns in the side this Thursday, they're more like, they're not so much thorns, they're more like small daggers. And then this. I got this story from our buddy John in New York. And it is at one and the same time a story of Americans standing together and speaking up for one another, while it is also a story of the failure of a judicial system that is dying a little bit day by day by day and is losing any moral authority that it once had. It's a story out of Dimmock, Pennsylvania. Dimmock, Pennsylvania in northeastern PA. A number of families in Dimmock Township of Susquehanna County had their water wells poisoned and made toxic by Cabot oil and gas. Cabot oil and gas is, of course, heavily active in what we know and certainly don't love as fracking. Cabot oil and gas poisoned these landowners' wills. And at first, the judicial system in Susquehanna County ordered Cabot to provide them water until they and filtration systems until they could get their water cleaned up. Cabot was ordered to install residential water treatment systems and provide shipments of water for 11 Dimmock families under the terms of a December 2010 settlement with the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection. This past October, the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, that's a sort of legal term of art because they're not doing it. Cabot went back to the court and said, listen, this is costing us money. We're job creators. This is cutting into our profit margin. This is cutting into our bonuses. This is cutting into our shareholder price. And besides, we've satisfied the requirements of the 2010 settlement. And the Department of Environmental Protection said, okie doke. Never mind the fact that the people of Dimmock, Pennsylvania, still have poisoned water in their poisoned wells. Imagine that. You're living in peace in Susquehanna County, Pennsylvania. The fracking company comes along with their PR campaign saying, we've never been proven to have poisoned a single drop of water. Well, no, you haven't been proven to have poisoned any single drops. You've poisoned dadgum kilogallons. Megagallons. And these people who are have literally a constitutional right to the quiet enjoyment of their property get that all nullified because of the relentless, merciless drive for profit on the part of Cabot Oil and Gas. So in an 11th-hour effort to compel Cabot Oil and Gas to continue supplying water to Dimmock, to those 11 families in Dimmock Township, they went back to the Pennsylvania DEP, and the DEP said, nope, sorry. Enter the inspiring part of this story. Binghamton, New York, a place I have heard about for years and years and years because it is the hometown of one of my oldest and dearest friends. Binghamton, New York, has a good mayor. A progressive mayor, as John tells me, by the name of Matthew T. Ryan. We're talking about Binghamton, New York, and Dimmock, Pennsylvania. Mayor Matthew T. Ryan is trying to find ways where the city of Binghamton can begin supplying the water of life to these American citizens who have been whose well-being has been sacrificed on the altar of unholy profit, who happen to live in Pennsylvania. Mayor Ryan says there's not going to be any money asked for. They're not going to charge. It's just the proper purpose of responsive government of the people, by the people, and for the people. One individual, Craig Stevens, who lives not in Dimmock but does live in Susquehanna County, said, I can call my friends in Dimmock and say, get ready because the city of Binghamton is going to come in and they're going to get you all topped off. And that is a beautiful thing. It is an inspiring reminder that we can make government work for the people for whom government is supposed to work, the people for whom the people that if government doesn't work for them, it works for none of the of us. Our buddy John describes Mayor Ryan as an all-around great progressive liberal. He says, this is great. Not only is it right that somebody step up when people are losing their freaking water from the freaking fracking, I'll add, but also from a PR standpoint. As you know, New York is maintaining a moratorium on fracking at least through January while people comment on a Department of Environmental Conservation report on the effects of natural gas drilling. This is the sort of story that people need to hear about. How often do we hear that fracking is totally safe? Oh, there's advertisements all over the TV about it. At least there is here in West Virginia. Won't harm the water at all, no sir. Notes John, yeah, tell that to the 11 families in Dimmock whose tanks are going to run dry tomorrow. John adds, the parallels between fracking and mountaintop removal are scary. One big difference is there is at least an outside chance that it could be stopped before it starts in New York. The other commonality, of course, being that this is an that at least in this instance, it is an Appalachian phenomenon. And whether the Appalachians be in New York, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, it matters not. Because Appalachian people are in a sacrifice zone. I dropped a note to Malloy last night when he mentioned that my senator, Blanche Manchin, was one of the people voting, one of the alleged Democrats voting in favor of indefinite detention. Because when I heard him talking about that, it occurred to me that maybe as we go forward, maybe, just maybe, it's going to turn out that Appalachian people have all along been the lab rats for the coming fascist, authoritarian, totalitarian, corporate-driven state that is the dream of the 1%. Yeah, the fracking is totally safe ads, our blogger Texas Betsy is reminding me, are national on what? Yeah, MSNBC, you know, that for-profit cable network that we're all convinced is liberal. That's why they've got that liberal Joe Scarborough on in the mornings, right? Yeah. Thanks, Betsy. As the Wicked Witch said in the Wizard of Oz, what a world, what a world, what a world. But just remember, you don't have any money to give the politicians of the 1%. You don't have any money to give the 1% corporations. So that leaves them no recourse but to take it from you. And that's what happens when you wind up with your wells poisoned. My heart goes out to these people in Susquehanna County, Pennsylvania. Because we know about this here. We know what it looks like to turn on one's faucet and see something that looks like tomato soup and smells like rotten eggs come running out of the faucet. Families here know what it's like to see their children's teeth rot in their heads, not because they're sitting around chewing on the bubble gum and eating all the candy and having the Mountain Dew mouth from drinking all that pop from the baby bottle, but because when Mama says, baby, don't forget to brush your teeth before bed, and when Mama says, baby, brush your teeth before school, and when Mama says, now dinner's over, go brush your teeth, and baby does, they're using the water that some coal company has rendered from being the literal bearer of life itself into a poisonous vehicle of cancerous horror. We know. And it would be far better that a place like New York and places like Pennsylvania be saved from these horrors before they can be fully imposed. So, to the extent that John mentioned, the story probably wouldn't get much play. At least let it be said that it got mention here on the Horn. At least let it be said that here we acknowledge the value of good people serving in good government, doing good works, even for folks for whom they are not obligated and who can never vote for them. But the decision to do good is made solely on the basis that good is what is required. It reminds me again of that slogan from the PRISM Project. We are not humans in search of a spiritual experience. We are spirits in search of a human experience. And that's what's going on when the trucks roll out from Binghamton. It is a quintessentially, beautifully, exquisitely human experience. So it's about 14 minutes before the hour, and let's go ahead and go to the phones. You know the number, 877-443-2366. That's toll-free. If you want to save us the toll-free money, you can dial in at 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so I read this article, talking about that Frank Lutz, right? I guess.
Isn't he sickening?
Well, this article paints as if they're kind of panicking about how to respond to, well, the indefensible. I mean, he admitted in this quote that the public sees capitalism as immoral. And I'm like, wow, bingo, motherfucker.
Are the numbers there? I mean, does that...
Well, they didn't have any... It wasn't any polling numbers. It was more just talking about the language. But I thought it was interesting because, what he's recommending isn't very helpful because he's saying, well, tax... Don't say tax the rich, but, the government is taking, but people don't care either way. I think people are so fed up. Yeah, take it. And what is wealth distribution if by force people ain't bothered by that either anymore after what Wall Street has done? I think that this paradigm that's in the public discourse now is a real problem for the reactionaries because their arguments aren't defensible in the face of what's happening on the ground,
Yeah, and they have no ability, they really do, they really don't. They have no ability to adequately respond to this sort of thing because you've still got Newt Gingrich out there saying, oh, the children need to clean the toilets in the school.
Yeah, no.
No, he really said that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's absurd. It's absolutely outrageous. I'm thinking, they're just incredibly regressive. But that's neither here nor there. I was more sort of amused by that because it's just like, yeah, once you get people thinking about where they're being fucked over, if they can put some, put a reasonably easy meme to it, yeah, you're in trouble, because when he's talking about, say, economic freedom, well, that can mean a lot,
Well, I'm kind of fascinated by this Nick Hanauer. Did you read this story today, Sandra? This is
What's that one?
He's a venture capitalist, a real live, honest-to-goodness one-percenter.
Mm-hmm.
He's helped launch over 20 companies, one of which was Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And in Bloomberg's Business Week today, he had an op-ed saying that... it is a myth that the rich are job creators. He says that the job creators are the middle class. He says,
yeah,
that,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, no, but that's just, I mean, if anyone who pays attention, yeah, that's a given. That's why that language is so poisonous. It's like, what are you talking about? I mean, the rich are being exposed as the parasites as they are, especially in the way this economy is formed. I mean, it's interesting that even the whole capital gains tax is coming under assault, i.e. people don't really understand why they're paying less anymore. because market formations aren't behaving like they should. If you're getting a break on capital gains, it's because the money is being invested in productive means, but it's not anymore. So people are saying, well, why are they getting that break? You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
It's like it's not performing the way it's promised. And people are seeing that, and they're like, well, wait a minute. You know, why in the world should you just pay 15%? Because your money is not doing anything that warrants that bit of a break, you know?
No, it's laying around gathering more money.
Right, and especially with the way money can move freely now. I mean, listen, there's a lot of things wrong, but certainly people having a cursory understanding of wealth distribution in America is definitely warranted. It's welcomed, I'm telling you.
Absolutely, and if anything is to be said for Frank Luntz, Sandra, it is this. He is the master of the bumper sticker policy. You know what I mean?
Well, the death tax. I mean, that's
right.
Brilliant.
That's sure. And to that extent, we do need to study some of what he does a little bit more deeply.
Oh yeah, no.
Because you know, when you look at these people who say, I don't want to pay no more taxes. Yeah, my response, Sandra, is to say, well, screw you. You're not very, very patriotic. You're not very American, are you? Why don't you move to wherever Bono moved to when he decided to evade taxes? Go somewhere else. Go to Somalia. Go to Haiti. Go to hell. I don't care.
Right. I mean, and that's why if they want to replace capitalism with economic freedom, it's problematic because health care is economic freedom, you know?
Sure it is.
And no student loans, that's economic freedom. And anything that makes a mobility within the society is economic freedom. So they're going to be, that's a bit of a weak meme for the far right to use because that can be co-opted very easily if you want to talk about freedom.
And this
freedom means all kinds of things to people.
Well, go back to FDR's four freedoms. What was the first? Freedom from fear, freedom from want.
Right.
Because a person in want, a person in fear, is a person who does not have freedom because they are constrained. These are constraints upon freedom.
Yeah. So anyway, it's just I guess it's just been such a huge long drought for progressive policies to actually be sticking. That's why I'm well pleased to see just this little inroad because it's a very important one. For people to understand, but I tell you, the 1%, if people thought that this shit, these people are really fighting back, because I see the Congress now as just sort of not even spokespeople for the 1%. They are the 1%, and now they have voted to hold, detain Americans indefinitely. I mean,
that gives that in conjunction with something else. Just gives me the blind shivers when you consider, for instance, this business that came out. There's a list out there at endoftheamericandream.com, and it's a list of 30 signs that the United States of America is being turned into a giant prison. Okay, and number 12 on that list is the following, Sandra. And this sort of plays in with the whole indefinite detention thing.
Mm.
Number 12, the FBI, and I think we mentioned this briefly on the show at some point, but not with the depth that it deserved. Number 12, the FBI is now admittedly recording internet talk radio programs all over the United States. Mark Weaver of WMAL.com wrote the following. If you call a talk radio show and get on the air, you might be recorded by the FBI. The FBI has awarded $524,927 in a contract to a Virginia company to record as much radio news and talk programming as it can find on the Internet. The FBI says it's not playing Big Brother by policing the airwaves, but rather seeking access to what airs as potential evidence.
Okay, listen. Well, I guess you and I are pretty much fucking see you at the gulag.
You know, I'll meet you at the southwest fence underneath the damn machine gun tower.
That is really disturbing to me. Oh my God! And not because, you know, I'm being a bit facetious, but I'm also really disturbed because I've always approached the interwebs as like, well, if you use it, it's all there and everybody knows. I am not thinking that this shit can't be mined and isn't mined. But that's you know, when it's just blatant now. It's
no, like, I mean, we've been sending out little messages to Agent Fred.
Yeah.
For years now.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's just kind of like, oh, what the hell? Maybe this is going to get in the way of my little plan that I'm doing for myself for my 50th. I'm going to Costa Rica, right?
Oh, you know how to hurt a guy.
I'm meeting a special someone there.
Oh, well, hello.
And so maybe I should... You know, not come back. No,
you might want to consider just sort of extending the visa a couple of times you can.
No, it's not, you know, I mean, I know this is really sort of, you know, myopic, but yeah, they got some fantastic flights. I mean, it's like $600 nonstop from San Francisco
to
San Jose.
Nice. Well, you know, you go down there, see if, you know, maybe see if Eugene Hassenfuss's old CIA compound might be available, and you know, we'll just form a commune, Sandra.
Just set something up. Yeah, no, listen, I'm kind of disturbed by it, because I know I be saying some outrageous shit on your show, so.
Yeah, because I haven't.
Well, you know, wow. I mean, really, I can imagine...
Well, I mean, I just want to put a little message out there. I want to, because I am a patriotic American, I want to save the government some money. So just...
Wow.
This is just, you know, this is just for whoever is there at the FBI that had this brilliant idea. Listen, you dumbass. You don't have to spend $500,000 to find out what we're saying here. We've been giving the podcast away for effing free for 6+ years on iTunes and at White Rose Society. So why don't you just go there and save us a little money?
Well, that's the efficacy of the private sector company that's bamboozled the government out of all that money.
It's yeah, because they've convinced the FBI that they can't find internet radio stations. Jesus.
Why can't, you know, part of me is like, well, shit, why can't we pony up and get us a contract for some bullshit like that? It would fun your radio show for a while.
Well, no kidding.
I know. I'm sorry. I know I sound suspect, but I'm like, damn. Don't you get sick of it? It's like, come on.
Well, see, like I said, this has been going on for years because we started referencing Agent Fred, Sandra, when Peter Godbold, our dear friend from Strictly Confidential years back, and remains a dear friend, started looking at things that were happening here and noticed that we were getting pinged by the Department of Defense through a port that nobody uses every blessed day.
Well, I am sort of, in all seriousness, that's really quite frightening in conjunction with the, oh, you're a terrorist, and we're just going to lock you up and throw away the key. I mean,
I'm surprised I can get on a plane.
Well, isn't this all like 800 years of English common law just sort of out the window right here?
Yeah, see
right
ya.
Now?
Yeah, goodbye.
And you know, we're going to have to rely on President Not Sure to veto it? Really? Is that for real?
Yeah, because he said he will.
Yeah, well, he said a lot, see, but this is really scary because I also read that they're trying to, you know, frame it in a way that people won't really know that is the deal now. So they're trying to hide it, obviously, from the people. But in actuality, if this becomes law, that is what's possible. And my question, as always, who decides who's a damn terrorist? See? We're into Orwell land now, for real. Because who's going to decide that? The government? Is that what's going on?
Well...
I mean, that just means that the American experiment is over, right?
Right, yeah. Or not. I mean, remember, we do have a history here. Maybe the American experiment is sort of going full stop reset to the Alien and Sedition Act of 1798.
And I can't believe that. I forget the Japanese man's name voted for this shit. The
Oh, you mean the Senator
Yeah.
Daniel Inouye?
Yes.
left a leg in Italy?
It's like, hello? And why is, you know, Fraulein Feinstein, she kind of trying to keep it from happening? That's interesting. I'm surprised, I got to say.
Well, there was that little tiny handful, but, you know, how many Democrats are on that list?
Yeah, no, let's see. I actually have,
And I was talking...
different amendments that keeps failing. Yeah, Feinstein's amendment failed, so...
I was trying to figure are Reid and White House of Rhode Island, did they vote?
They voted for it. I mean, they voted to kill the amendment. No, White Horse, whatever his name is, he is not our friend, man. I don't know. People keep trying to make him out to be, but he ain't shit. And so, you know, it's just kind of anyway. I don't know where it stands right at this minute, but I know that. I thought the only thing between it becoming law isn't it a veto?
Yeah.
I mean, because did it pass? Does it have to be reconciled now between the houses? See, I don't know where it's at.
I don't. Given the amount of emendation that went on in the Senate, I would think it would have to go to a conference committee, wouldn't it?
Right. Yeah, I'm assuming that's the stage. But at any rate, you know, between that and I don't know who got a hold of Al Franken, but somebody needs to tell his dumb ass, you know, why the hell are you trying to pass that SOPA shit? You know, the IP, protect the IP, Orwellian bullshit, which really...
Well, I mean, can we just get out... And I don't think this is a matter of getting out one's aluminum foil helmet, Sandra, but when you see things like this FBI business and SOPA... Is it too far of a reach to suggest that maybe some in government are convinced that the freedom of speech is getting just a little too darn free?
Well, and it's a switch, you know, to switch off the internet. You know, I mean, because listen, if you're looking at what's coming and that little desperate ploy of the central banks the other day, I'm like, oh shit, this shit is way, way up north, because you notice today that the stock markets were, like, completely flat and dead. It's like, yeah, bitch, that ain't going to work, you know?
Yeah, because there was a little 4% bounce yesterday?
No, it was, but 400 points don't mean shit anymore, if you've noticed. You've noticed that.
Yeah, I remember back in the 80s when I was first learning the journalism business, and I'd be working the overnight, and I'd see the Nikkei average in Japan, and it'd be like, it was up 100,000 points today. And I looked at the business editor and said, the hell, 100,000 points? And the business editor looked at me and said, oh, stop it. That thing goes up 100,000 points, 500,000 points. It's meaningless.
Yeah, well, that's what...
And that's where we're approaching.
Becoming. Yeah, it's becoming like that. And also, you know, it was something just a little bit disturbing about the central banks coordinating around the world. That kind of gave me the heebies, truth be told.
You know, it's funny. We call it coordinating when banks do it, but if anybody else does it, we call it a conspiracy.
Well, okay, yeah, but it was just bizarro. I'm like, oh, my God. And then, you know, for the markets to get that hyped up about really what they're doing, which was just kind of sterilizing currencies, I mean, it really wasn't all that much. It was more dramatic, more theater, you know, than anything else, because the spreads are still high in Italy, and, you know, I guess they want to push the central bank in Europe to take the plunge, but they still haven't yet. Anyway, I don't know, but I am scared of the rapid creation of the police state, because that's what's going on. Because I think if we have another crash, they're gonna have to have everything in place, because, you know, Americans are pretty silly, but they will be running in the streets.
But I've got a question here. You know, you talk, and I think you're correct, Sandra. But I have, and this is not a smart-ass question. This is a real question. Where are all of those individual rights and liberties, personal freedoms, libertarian, 10th Amendment, states' rights? Where the hell are they with this indefinite detention thing?
That's what I don't understand. I mean, I know that the various Pauls, they voted, you know, they're against it, from what I can tell.
But if Barack Obama says that he wants to have miso soup on the Christmas Eve menu, he's anti-American, okay?
Or he don't say God when he's talking about...
Yeah, and that's for real.
Thanksgiving, remember that?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, come on.
And they go into the streets and they scurry around and come out from under the little baseboards where the roaches live. But this, no, they turn from roaches into crickets.
No, that's because I just think that there's a huge portion of this country that, you know, runs authoritarian, and they really don't care because they don't think it's going to be them, you know? And of course, you know, this country has a tendency to embrace this shit because there's so many undesirables in our society. I'm saying that in quotes. We don't
including Mercedes and Honda executives in Alabama, for Christ's sakes.
You know, I don't know. I just am sort of, you know, I'm just scared of the sort of indefinite detention. Though that is such a worry to me because, you know, you're going to get naive people running out in the streets, you know, protesting and doing what they do, and then they're going to start disappearing and shit. You know, I just think that the U.S., the average American citizen can be beat back pretty quickly before they realize what's what, you know what I mean? So, and think about who's doing this. We have a Congress that has, you know, 91% of the people hate them. You understand what I'm saying? And now they're passing laws to indefinitely detain us. You know, think about that. They're hated. I mean, I've never seen an institution so hated since I've been paying attention to politics.
Never. No, you're absolutely right.
Good Jesus. So. You know, we're definitely, it's starting to get really hostile to me.
And, you know,
the
other thing that's out there that, you know, we've talked about Spencer Bacus out there shorting his GE trades and things like that. This story that came out a few days ago about former Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson. Okay, now, dude was literally passing out insider information to his buddies in the hedge funds, not in the Congress, in the hedge funds. He was doing it, okay?
Yeah, as he was Secretary of Treasury, right?
Right.
Right. No, I mean, it's, well, we have the sort of, you know, the whole insider trading. I mean, it just smacks of total, it's like Argentina, it's just corrupt, you know? Banana Republic is completely out of whack.
It's, well, I don't understand how somebody somewhere, some U.S. attorney somewhere, hasn't impaneled a grand jury. This is stuff that happened in 2008, and he was leaking insider info on the government takeover of Fannie and Freddie.
Well, no, I mean it just speaks to, you know, we're now a country of men, you know, and not laws. I mean that's the only way I can frame it because there's so many areas where the law isn't being applied that it will never be applied. Another little story that I saw in the Financial Times, I was sort of like, hello? So apparently what's going on right now is they're about to alter more laws that were created 80 years ago, the security exchange laws, to make it easier to maintain accounts for private companies to go public. Basically, I won't go into all the details because it's a bit opaque, but these are more laws like the Glass-Steagall. That's how important these laws are that they're fucking with right now. This is in secret or it's just not in the press, and the Obama administration is supporting it, whereas there's a handful of Democrats and a couple of Republicans who are really kind of nauseated and upset about what's transpiring. And that's also going on right now. So you have these security exchange laws that are being altered in favor of giant corporations again, under the auspices of saying that, well, a small startup shouldn't have to be required to deal with all these regulations, if you can believe this. And I'll send you the article, and I'm sorry I'm not being very articulate, but just know that these are laws that were created after we got fucked in the 30s. You see, another response to what we saw happen before to destroy the market, and they fixed it, and now they're trying to undo it again. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I don't shake my head just thinking, good Jesus.
Well, and it's almost like there's some degree of jealousy at work, Sandra. You know, well, they got to do it in the 20s. Why can't we do it now?
Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible that the deregulation.
But they know. It's like what I was talking with David last night about and mentioned this evening. It's not that this isn't sustainable. It won't be sustainable sometime in the future. It's not sustainable right now. And the 1% know it, Sandra. And these are all proactive measures taken by the 1% of the 1% for the 1% in order to get what they can get before it all comes unglued. Don't you have a sense of that?
Yeah, and in conjunction with this, tightening of this security apparatus that we have going in full effect, but. You know, I also look at some of the news in China, because China has, like, loosened up the capital requirements for their banks, and that was pretty dramatic. It's like, oh, snap. So their shit is slowing, you know.
Yeah, if we were talking about medicine and we were talking about unrestrained growth, we'd be calling it cancer.
Well,
and it's an economic cancer, too, and sooner or later, unrestrained growth will eat whatever body it's existing in, be it economic, physical, human, Fido, it doesn't matter. Unrestrained growth is toxic and terminal.
Well, Sarkozy made a speech, I guess today, or maybe it was yesterday, but I mean, he said the problem was globalization unregulated. And you know, it's like, I'm not a fan. But also the French, they have a whole different outlook on capitalism. They're much more state-enhanced, the power of the state and state-operated enterprises. So, but the problem is that the globalization is going to just sweep everything away the way it's going.
Well, and there's that and the so-called global security situation. Because, you know, when I read that story, and I mentioned it on the show last night that you sent me from the news.
From the Australian?
The Australian, yeah. About basically a handful of Israeli military officials saying, yeah, we did it. Blowing up that the nuclear installation in Iran. I was reminded, you know, I made several mentions a few weeks ago that I was rereading Barbara Tuchman's The Guns of August. And in discussing why Woodrow Wilson wanted so desperately to stay out of the First World War, the Great War, she made this, and anything you read by Barbara Tuchman, you know, there are these just brilliant little, you know, bang, right between the eyes moments. And she said, Woodrow Wilson was a progressive president who had progressive goals for the United States, and then here it comes. Woodrow Wilson realized that war always stops progress. And so, understanding that the economy is melting down all over the globe, understanding that it would appear that Israel is doing everything in its power to start World War III, because last night after the show, I got an email to a story in which the Iranians were responding, saying, well, you know what? Keep doing this, and we're going to attack your missile shield, NATO's missile shield bases in Turkey. Now, Sandra, I mean, I'm no Napoleon, I'm no Clausewitz, but if it gets to that, suddenly it escalates beyond a little routine assassination in the Balkans, you know what I mean? Some damn thing in the Balkans?
Well, and that's why it's really frightening to see the sort of deterioration of the situation in Europe, because this is what we're talking about now is war. I mean, you have currency war, trade war, war. I mean, that's how it goes. And right now, this Euro madness would constitute a currency war. So, I mean, we're not that far away from.
And don't forget culture war. Have you seen this story about this jackass from the BBC? In response to the strike?
Oh, yeah, no. I was talking to my friend in London today online about this bitch wanting to execute strikers in front of their family.
Yeah, Jeremy Clarkson is the host of BBC's Top Gear. And he said, frankly, I'd have them all, speaking of the strikers, I'd have them all shot. I would take them outside and execute them in front of their families. I mean, how dare they go on strike when they've got these gilt-edged pensions that are going to be guaranteed while the rest of us have to work for a living?
No, while he works for the BBC. Last time I heard, the BBC is funded by who?
Right.
So he needs to shut the hell up. Now, listen, them people are in a fantasy world, too, because 2 million people on the streets in Britain, listen, it's getting a lot like France and England up in here.
Getting a little warm.
That's a lot of damn people. And, listen, I don't know. I do worry about the U.S. because in Britain, people are pretty astute. I was always impressed when I lived there just what people fucking knew. And they knew hella about the U.S. and the system here. We don't know nothing about them. And they are like, you know, they're just much more aware politically. And so, you know, I worry about us over here because... You know,
what was that Fairleigh Dickinson study that came out not too awfully long back that said Fox viewers actually know less news than people who don't take in the news at all? I mean, I never knew it was possible to get into that sort of negative numbers algebra with knowledge.
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought, too. I said, oh, my God, that's minus numbers here. Listen, did you happen to see that Bloomberg thing? God damn it, he's a Napoleon.
Oh.
He looks like Napoleon. He's a small man. He got issues.
This takes just a little bit of brass.
You know?
I don't want to be president. I've got the 7th largest army in the world in the NYPD.
My God. It was just, because, you know, the thing about him, that's why I always laugh him off, because, in America, you know, short assholes don't become president. It's just kind of a fact. So you see him standing up against Obama, who's like, whatever, 6'4". I think Bloomberg's like 5'2". I swear to God. I don't know, maybe he's taller, but yeah. That's going to be his undoing. He can spend $1 billion, and I don't think people are going to vote for some small...
Doesn't that sort of just out him as a... He's not even a proto-fascist.
No,
he just is one.
And he has a lot of money. You know, he's just... I think that... Yeah, he's just looking at New York as his little thiefdom. I mean, he's a horrible sort of character, I have to say. He's very, very, very disgusting. I just thought that article was just hilarious, and that was in the Mail. And this other article that I sent you from that German, that was on it. I was laughing out loud. I was like, oh, my God. I mean, I almost wish I could read it in the damn German, because I bet it's even funnier.
With those 50 euro compound German compound nouns.
Right, you know. In
English it's titled A Club of Liars, Demagogues, and Ignoramuses. In German, I'll bet that's one word.
Yeah, no. Anyway, but, you know, so now I'm a follower. I had added him to my Twitter because I'm like, no, this fool is on hit. He didn't spare nothing. He was name-calling. It was great.
Mark Pitzke, P-I-T-Z-K-E, yeah.
And I sent you that response because, you know, the right don't like him. I just thought, well, you need to see what they're saying about him. I'm freaking out. At any rate, I just thought you would enjoy that because it was so brutal and so, and it was embarrassing. You know, as an American, you're like, damn, wow.
But the thing is, it's not really Pitzke who's doing the mean stuff, because what he's actually doing is quoting Republicans in large part, referring to this group. I mean, it was Peggy Nooner, right?
Called him a freak show.
That called this crowd a freak show.
No, you didn't call her Nooner. Yeah, a Nooner with a Reagan.
Yeah.
In his coffin. Yeah, she's sick, man. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, she will forever be Peggy Nooner to me.
Oh, my God. Anyway, but this article is just it just made me think, my God, yeah, those people who are running on the Republican side are so disturbing.
And in the article itself, lo and behold, he references a quote from that David Frum article I was talking to you about a few days ago,
right,
from New York Magazine. When did the GOP lose touch with reality? And it's true, you know, the Reaganites are coming out of the woodwork. These people are nuts.
Yeah.
Because it's not just that Richard Nixon would be unwelcome in the 2011 Republican Party, so would Ronald Reagan.
And that freak from the early 60s, from Arizona. What's his name?
Oh, Goldwater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He wouldn't, you know.
I forget what day it was, but I just happened to see a little bit of, you know, that toxin that I can't help watching in the morning. It's like a train wreck, you know, Morning Joe.
Oh, right, yes, yes.
I mean,
my mother watches that. I was like,
what? They had Newt Gingrich's former communications director on, who just sat there and put dart after dart after dart into Newt's lard ass. Talking, he said we'd have policy meetings, and I'd be at one end of the table, and Newt would be at the end of the other end of the table. And after a while, I'd say, well, you know, I don't know if we want to do that. And he'd just start arguing. And the way the guy described it, he said, after a while, all the other people on the other sides of the table just disappeared, like some sort. We'd moved in, and the arguments were coming from Newt at light speed plus, like some sort of neutrinos. And I about spit out my coffee. You know, Newt, neutrino. It was precious. And but the point behind all of this is that even the people who are supposed to be supporting the usual suspect are finding these people suspect.
I mean, no, but then also the sort of, I mean, is that Rick Perry as stupid?
He said, if you're going to be 21 on November the 12th, 2012, I sure hope you'll vote for me here in New Hampshire.
Yeah, I'm just in awe of that one. Oh, my God.
But he goes on, you know, that Herman Cain, you know, Herm's going to decide by next week, is it? Whether he's going to...
He checks out.
Right, yeah.
It's never going to stop. And...
But the funny thing is, all the people who said he was going to suck air have sort of pulled back, and it's like they're hiding because they think that he's suddenly going to be a big-time NFL quarterback.
Listen, maybe they'll trade him to, what's his hometown? Jacksonville or whatever. He can go.
No, those fundies aren't going to let him lead. No, Colorado Springs is to fundamentalism what Rome and the Vatican is to Roman Catholics.
Well, nobody.
And by the way, you want to talk about getting on the crazy train and going to crazy town? I just got an email in here from James that says, I just saw a lawn sign. Yes, we can. It's out there.
Oh my God! Listen, all I can think of what flashed in my mind right now was Home Chick from Being There. Talking about Only in America. That's what that is, right?
What is it with you white people?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Oh my God.
But there's
a good game.
I think Timmy or Timmy. I think he gets to play ball with the Bears this Sunday.
What's the quarterback, Jake Cutler, isn't he out for a minute?
Haney is in, and he actually played a halfway respectable ball game against the Raiders. When you've got Sebastian Janikowski kicking a Raiders record 6 field goals.
Oh shit! Well, that guy he's a bit of a freak, but he's incredible.
Yeah, and you know, everybody said that Al Davis was insane because he was number one.
One, he was no. Who don't remember? If you live in California, you remember that whole narrative.
I mean, it was like there was going to be marches on, you know.
Yeah, that was some crazy ass Al Davis shit right there. Yes, you know, you gotta love him for real on that one. But so how many games are left? Is it 6 games left? I haven't made.
Yeah, 6, I think, depending on who had the bye when.
And they got Chicago. I mean, is their schedule heavier or lighter?
It's lighter.
Oh, my God.
That's about as.
You could possibly win 9 games this season, right?
Yeah.
Well, that John Elway, he seems pretty reasonable. I mean, he's not some fundy, is he?
No, and I don't. but you know, they. But no, I mean, you know, but they got rid of They got rid of their starting quarterback. You know, he's goodbye. Now it's nothing but Tebow and that fellow with the gigantic head from Notre Dame.
Brady Quinn.
Yeah, Brady. That's right.
Oh shit. Well, listen, I don't understand because I can't. You know, don't let me have to be pulling for some Tom Brady because I will.
Yeah, I know. I'll do it. I will.
I'll do anything. And my other cutie ain't doing that well, Sanchez. I mean, he's some eye candy for real. But he ain't playing that good. What's happening?
Well, it's the Jets. Come on. I mean, Keith from New York was on, a couple of nights ago, and he said, you know, if you're a Jets fan, and I said, it's kind of like being a Cubs fan. And, oh, yeah. And, you know, there's Texas Betsy sitting there suffering season in, season out with the J-E-T-S, Jets, and it just... It ain't gonna happen.
Oh,
you got one Joe Namath Super Bowl, and it ain't gonna happen no more.
No, I don't. You know, I don't know. You know,
because remember that. Remember, I mean, all the wisdom said that the Super Bowl was gonna be the Eagles and the Jets.
The Eagles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the preseason. Yeah, it's gonna be Eagles and the Jets. Oh, no. Oh, I so lied to you. I so lied to you. No, the continuing hagiography of Timmy Tebow is going to get even worse this week.
Oh, what is it? Who is it?
It's the Vikings.
Oh, no. So that's another good opportunity, huh, for him?
Oh, yeah. He'll be kneeling and praying and... speaking in tongues. And
oh, and I heard today, because, you know, I mean, unfortunately, I was driving my car, and I had Mike and Mike on. That show drives me crazy. But they were talking about he was giving a pep talk before the game.
Oh, did he make the promise again? You know, because they damn near, well, they cast that in bronze at the University of Florida after Ole Miss whooped them. No, here's the rest of the Broncos' schedule. And okay, yeah, it's okay. So it's the Vikings. That's going to be awful.
Yeah.
Then they are at home with the Bears, who will probably be, you know, breathing, you know, spewing blood, just trying to breathe that time of year. Then they're at home to the Patriots.
Oh shit! Well, that's one I might have to try to lock in and watch that one.
And then they finish out on the road at the Bills, and home with the Chiefs.
Come on!
They're only a game back of the Raiders.
Oh God, the Patriots is really the only huge challenge, isn't it?
But both the Bears and the Patriots come to Mile High, and. You know, Denver gets to give 3 points just on the oxygen content.
Well, no, I mean, I've watched games with the Patriots and the Broncos in the past where they beat the Patriots fairly regularly. It's not, you know, it's not unheard of. So, God. Anyway, I just am sort of mortified by the whole spectacle.
Well, and you know, only because it's disgusting.
it's just really bothersome. But it's funny how, you know, I see the basketball, they're trying to get themselves together. The thing about them is that people want a shorter season. So if they're only playing 60 games, it's like, yay. They might want to consider doing that permanently.
That makes sense to me. 60 games is plenty, especially when you consider the length of the playoffs.
Oh, and the only other sports thing that I was laughing at, because another talk person that I hate desperately is that Colin Cowherd. Have you heard of him?
Oh, he's loathsome. He's disgusting.
God, he's hideous. Anyway, he interviewed Tiger Woods today.
No.
Right. And I haven't had a chance. I was thinking about tracking it down to see what it was. But what I'm thinking is, my, how the mighty have fallen. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, when you're doing interviews with third tier ESPN radio guys, when you can't even get Dan. Yeah, well, when you're doing interviews with ESPN radio's resident racist.
Yeah, he's horrible.
Because this is the same guy that just rode Chad Ochocinco like a borrowed mule for weeks on end. Well, you just wait. I remember driving down the road here and was thinking, you know, God damn, this is not radio. This is just slander. You just wait. He won't have a pot to piss in a year after he's out of the league, spending all that money on all that bling.
And then that's when Ochocinco came out and tweeted something about, you know, I had your girlfriend or something real crazy. It was hilarious. I wish I remember what he said, but he clowned that Cowherd's ass. He's disgusting. He's like the worst. I can't stand that guy. He's just some sort of right wing, always talking about the producer. He's one of them types.
Yeah, and see, as compared, he may. Jim Rome is Edward R. Murrow compared to Colin Cowherd.
Please, compared to that. Are you kidding me? Not only that, but I can even tolerate, you know, Mike and Mike compared to the.
Yeah.
But he has to be the worst. And I was just laughing because I'm thinking about poor old Tiger. It's like, Tiger, you're slim. You understand what I'm saying? What happened? What the hell's going on? You know?
Got them caddy problems and.
No, and then the slimness and all. Yeah, so his shit is real weak. I don't know what's going on with old Tiger, but I said, no, don't talk to that.
Yeah, things get weird when you go off the human growth hormone.
Yeah, and you know, it's
you're not
like,
so bow-legged anymore, and you get your neck back, and your face stops looking like you're 14 years old.
You're not so puffed up anymore, and more importantly, how do you putt? Can't swing, can't putt. Your short game sucks. What happened? You go on calling Cowherd. It's like, good Lord. Anyway, listen.
Yeah, you it's not like he could do it. He had to do Colin Cowherd. It's not like Celebrity Jeopardy was open.
Oh, my God. But anyway, shouldn't even comment because I haven't even heard the interview. I just, the start of it just sort of had me nauseated because, you know, that guy just, he really drives me up the wall. So.
I know. There are just some that out there that do it to you, Sandra. We get in late from these Dr. Bill Prism American History chats.
Mm-hmm.
So we roll in the door, you know, it's 11:15, something like that. And you can't just say, okay, good night, everybody, because you're still, you know, that's
yeah,
my
wind down.
Yeah, that's my 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, my that's too late for a nighty night beer or anything like that. So, you know, on goes the electric TV box, and I'm casting around, and there's effing Ed Schultz. You know, God, I love GQ burned him to the ground. I don't know if you saw this, but they listed.
Oh, I heard a bit about it.
Yeah, they listed Ed Schultz as the third least influential human being on the planet.
Didn't they say nobody watches it?
The only reason you're watching it is because you're on the Stairmaster and that you can't get anybody to come turn the channel.
Oh, my God, no. And he is so... That has to be one of the most thin-skinned assholes out there, that Ed Schultz. He's terrible.
So there's that, but... So, no, not gonna stay there, you know. So make the obligatory sweep down to Channel 9, hoping there's some sort of rerun on PBS. But no, F me running. It's Charlie Rose or Tavis Smiley or something. And I'm just afraid they're going to hypnotize me and make me go out and do, you know, do terrible things.
Well,
so I got to go. And so I go across CNN, and I have never watched it before, Sandra. But like a slow-moving train wreck, I actually gave like 20 minutes of my life to Aaron Burnett.
Oh, see, no, you need an ice pick for the eye for that shit. She is horrific. Are you kidding?
And I don't mean just because she's a right-wing horse's rear end.
No, she's just terrible anyway.
She is bad at what she does.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I mean.
I mean, I clown around behind the microphone about not being able to pronounce things and stuff. But if you give me $1 million,
right,
and you put me in front of the TV camera, I'm going to be trying to figure out how to pronounce people's names.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree.
You know, just little basic things. In the space of less than probably 90 seconds, she screwed up two basic names that you don't screw up if you're even remotely paying attention. You only screw these names up if you're a Fox viewer who knows less about what's going on than people who don't even watch the news. And one of them, she had the South Carolina member of the House on, and she didn't just do it once, she did it twice, maybe three times. She referred to him as Representative Clyburn. The guy's name's Clyburn. But she emphasized that O-R, Clyburn. I'm like, honey, this guy's high up in the minority, Democratic minority hierarchy in the House. His name's Clyburn. You've got interns there who know his name is Clyburn. You've got one of those much maligned teleprompters in front of you that can give it to you phonetically, and not 90 seconds later they segue from the story, some story about it was about the super committee and about the already burgeoning attempts to defeat the triggers, okay. And she transitions out of that to the story, the Syracuse story, where she starts repeatedly referring to Syracuse head basketball coach Jim Boeheim.
Oh, no! Oh, shut up.
And, you know, I try not to be one of those guys who criticizes somebody's spelling on the Internet. Because, you know, when you're down to saying, oh, I can outspell you, you know, you're pretty much picking over the bones at that point. But this is for-profit media, 1% broadcasting, multi-millionaire in front of the camera.
Yeah.
And it's a big story, and you can't even be bothered to look up. Look, it's Boeheim. You know what? She doesn't have any problem saying Boehner.
No.
But he's Boeheim.
No, she's hideous. She's awful. You know, amazing.
And it's just astonishing, or at least to me, Sandra, because I don't spend that much time with it. It is simply astonishing to me to see how badly degraded the 1% for-profit media have become. They're not even trying anymore.
Yeah, no, it's just terrible programming and it's just terrible information. But by the way, do you know if the Roots had to apologize, or was it the network that apologized to Bachman? You know that story.
Yeah. I think it was the Roots themselves.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
God.
You know, we poked fun at people, and we certainly didn't mean to hurt anybody.
Oh shit! I said, oh no. Anyway, because they're like a fabulous group.
Yeah, they are.
I saw them in person years ago in San Francisco. But anyway, I just thought that was damn funny. I mean, how many days did it take Bitch to realize what was going on? That was the most funny.
Jesus. she was studying up on back when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor, Sandra.
Or praying away to whoever, right?
Right, and declaring that teaching evolution is teaching the only viable theory of biological diversity, that's government censorship.
Oh, listen, and one more thing. Where is Mr. Obama? Is he at some summit? Is he back in town? I mean, I ain't seen him in days.
He's been a traveling man. Okay. He's made a lot of stops. Now, I don't know if he's home yet or not.
Anyway, you better try to get some FaceTime.
Here in a minute, after we close out our conversation, I've got some audio to run from, Morning Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Joe apparently had a scream fest at Mika today.
Oh, that poor bitch. She's still on there?
Yeah. Screamed at her over Obama.
Listen, when is that Clinton chick? She got some sort of broadcasting job, too. Where's the qualifications for that?
You know, whatever the qualifications were that got Luke Russer the job.
Oh. He's an idiot. Good Lord.
There's no meritocracy in the for-profit 1% media anymore.
No, I see. But I was like Clinton. I mean, I know she's over-edumacated, but really?
I still love that word. I just love that word.
I know. Okay, have a good evening.
All right. Take care, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. No, yeah, just take a minute for this. Remember, Joe Scarborough was mixed up in a suspicious death of a beautiful young woman named Lori Clausoutis, who was just found dead in his Florida office one day. Whoops, the day. And they had to bring in a guy who had been delicensed as a medical examiner in Missouri and then hastily relicensed in Florida, who declared that, well, you know, yes, this 27-year-old, beautiful, perfectly healthy young woman who ran 20 miles a day and was in perfect health, she died of a spontaneous heart attack. Can we cremate the body? Yes. Right. So, Joe Scarborough went bananas on poor Mika this morning. And that's, you know, going bananas on Mika is like kitten kicking. It's, well, you judge it. Here we go.
Isn't the president from Hope and Change? What has happened?
Well, it's so interesting. I mean, I think that Obama doesn't like his job, actually, either. I mean, I think that he is genuinely of a professorial disposition in the sense that I think he's interested in chewing over the pros and cons of any issue, but he doesn't like power. He doesn't know how to exercise power. And I think knowing how to exercise power is absolutely crucial. He doesn't understand how to underpin his ideas with the political, gritty, granular business of getting it done. And that kind of gap has just widened and widened and widened, so that every time there's a moment, a window where you can jump in, yeah, like something like a Simpson Bowles as well, he just doesn't do it. He hangs back at crucial moments when you have to dive through that window.
And regardless of your ideology, it is very safe to say, I think most people would agree, LBJ, he is not. Bill Clinton, he is not. When it just comes to understanding how to make Washington work.
Well, it appears, off of what Tina said, what you just said, it appears that you can make a case that Barack Obama doesn't like politics.
Right. I absolutely feel that. Well, who would today? I mean, I think it's great.
Well,
that you
know what?
He doesn't like his
job. Oh, come on.
Who
listen.
Would
if you don't like medicine, don't be a doctor. If you don't like politics, don't put yourself out there to run the free world, Mika.
Politics today.
No. Stop the apologizing.
I'm not apologizing.
You're apologizing. Who would like politics today? You know what?
Who would?
He is running the free world.
One of these days, I hope. And I know, I'm getting sucked in. It's like NASCAR or soap operas or something. I'm shallow, okay? I just am. One of these days, I just want to see her slap the shit out of him. I do. I just do. They're sitting there bickering at each other like a couple that's been engaged for 19 years and it's finally going to come unglued.
Better know. A lot of people loved politics. Bill Clinton loved politics. FDR loved politics. Ronald Reagan loved politics. Great leaders love what they do.
When the system functions. And that's the problem. The system we have now has become utterly, completely, and totally dysfunctional. As Sandra referenced, 91% of the people in this country hate Congress's guts. And there's a significant percentage who, left and right, so-called left and right, who despise Barack Obama. It would wear on you after a while. It really would.
Isn't it politics? Isn't it really also about, well, the other word for politics is just doing what it takes to get it done? Like, you know, one of the things that's interesting about Obama is that he kind of, and I think he does believe in this, is that his idea of being a transformative figure who can cross many persuasions and orientations and aisles, and yet when it actually has taken to reaching out and really bringing that in and trying,
yeah,
I don't think he really does.
Well, the analogy to 1979 is something we should explore a little bit more. Because for all the obvious.
I mean, this is like one of those embarrassing country club cocktail parties where the little woman tries to get a word in, and her drunk husband with the jingling scotch and ice cubes in his glass. Oh, shut up, honey. What the, you know?
people are supposed to love their jobs. Right?
You know, this woman wrote a book about knowing your worth. Well, either she learned some very ugly things and is just going to draw her breath and pay, or again, a beautiful example of multi-million-dollar media. By the way, sorry for the time that that we were away from you. The stream went down for a little bit, and hopefully everything is all squared up. We're back. My apologies for the disappearance. Oddly enough, it happened right as we were talking about the FBI monitoring internet radio stations. Just a little shot across the bow. Oh, Jesus, the next thing I'll be putting out videos and turning into Alex Jones. Well, at least I'll be able to fix the roof. Ray has been paying attention to the program. Slap the shit out of Joe, cane Nancy Grace in a public square. Love that one, Bob. I'm sensing a trend here. Oh, good God, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Yes.
Grant from Portland.
Oh, hey, Grant. How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. I wanted to query your legal mind.
Well, I am not a lawyer, and I don't play one on the radio.
Okay. Well, it was about the Senate bill.
Okay.
Well, the thing is this. Attempting to eviscerate the Bill of Rights in one fell swoop, how is this not a violation of their oath of office? I don't... You know, it's like...
Grant,
referral out of this?
With all reverence and respect, I can only say don't go down the oath of office road.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. If it were to be taken before the Supreme Court would hold, I imagine, that it was strictly a ceremonial statement.
Yeah, with Fat Tony up there, it's a little hard to make that go.
Well, look, the Fat Tony and the rest of that right-wing fascist crowd is of the opinion that the preamble to the Constitution of the United States isn't really the preamble. I mean, it isn't really the Constitution. That it's just, you know, it's kind of like a curlicue on the top of a page. You know, that whole part about we, the people of the United States, in order to create a more perfect union, do here establish, blah, 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 do here establish this, yada, yada, yada. That's not, those don't matter. Those words aren't law. It's not law until it says Article 1. And so I imagine they would respond in the same way.
If they only had a foresight to put a big zero and a period before W, I don't know.
Yeah. I wouldn't go down that road. Now, on the other hand, I had an email from our dear friend Jude a little bit ago, who said that she was monitoring C-SPAN at the same time watching the show.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that some commenter during the debate said that ultimately the court will decide whether or not what they're doing is constitutional. And that's true. The court will ultimately decide. But you know what kind of court we've got, Grant? Any halfway sane Supreme Court would look at something like that and go, nope, it's got to go. Indefinite detention, sorry. Because the Constitution is crystal flippin' clear on things like habeas corpus. There are two times you can suspend habeas corpus in the United States. And when you're talking about indefinite detention of American citizens, what you are essentially talking about is ultimately the outright suspension of habeas corpus. All right?
Right.
And the Constitution says in the time... here, give me a second. I'll just pull the whole thing up.
Rebellion, sedition, or war, or something like that?
In case... let me just do this real quick.
Sure.
Yeah, there it is. Article 1, Section 9. God, I love the internets.
Handy little tubes.
Yeah, absolutely. The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion the public safety may require it. So, frankly, the only way you get around this is to say that these one percenters who are sitting in the Congress, and there is hardly a member of the Congress who is not a one percenter, are anticipating that at some point in time the people of the United States are going to get fed the F up and revolt and rebel.
And isn't it ironic that it seems like they're doing their damnedest to incite exactly that?
Well, of course.
I mean, look at what's happened. It's like, surveil them utterly, rob them blind.
Yes.
And then incarcerate them forever because you think it's a good idea. Or you can make something up about somebody. You don't like their email.
Well, I mean, consider what's going on. Granted, this is not on a federal level, and it's not necessarily, oh, yes, it is, a constitutional issue. But consider what's going on in Alabamistan. Now, we had the story about the Mercedes executive. We had the story about tonight about the Honda employee. We have stories about crops literally rotting in the fields that are going to drive food prices up. And of course, the speculators in the futures markets will make it even worse. All right? All because of a bunch of bigots who have gotten the reins of government in the state of Alabama. Okay? So, like I said, now what you have is law enforcement, you know, Deputy Fife there pulling over the Mercedes executive, Deputy Cooter pulling over the Honda worker in Talladega County. But at other law enforcement dispatch stations all around the state of Alabama,
mm-hmm.
law enforcement are beginning to complain.
Interesting.
Because what's happening is that there is a frenzy taking place in Alabamistan right now, Grant. And the frenzy is of ordinary citizens calling 911 or the sheriff's office or the city police department. City police, Sarah, get me the police. And saying, you know what? I want you, I live at 1312 Mockingbird Lane. And I want you to investigate my next door neighbor. I don't know for sure, but I think they might be illegal aliens. And under HB 56, law enforcement then has to do that. It's not
with the stink calls.
Right. They are getting buried by rats. And the true nature of conservative family values, Southernism, is rushing to the front because in effect what you have, if you know, for instance, the stories of Soviet East Germany,
mm-hmm.
half of the country was in the pay of the Stasi, okay?
To watch the other half,
and half the time you had to, you know, most in any given situation you had an opportunity obtaining where you've got two secret Stasi rats trying to rat each other out. It was as loony and goofy as anything ever published on the pages of Mad Magazine under the header of Spy versus Spy.
Well, it would get you an extra roll of toilet paper per week.
And they do the same thing in North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? It's where fascist totalitarianism, authoritarianism, always goes, and it is alive and well and blooming like ragweed after a rain in Alabamistan. So to ask questions about, you know, where we're going, look at Alabama. To look at where we're going, look at the bonds that were imposed on nonviolent civil disobedience practitioners in West Virginia over the last few years. You know, there were cases. There was a guy who was accused of sexually abusing a child who got out of pretrial detention on something like a $5,000 or $10,000 bond at the same time that a tree sitter, was subjected to a $100,000 bond. That's in the last year and a half.
This place is so fucking upside down.
Yeah, well, no, it's not, Grant. I mean, I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable. It's not upside down. This is perfectly according to plan. This is absolutely within the realm of what the 1% want. The 1% don't give a rat's ass about freedom because this country recognizes wealth as the measure of freedom.
You know, it's kind of weird. A friend of mine's into emotional literacy training. And she gave me a little bit of instruction on the dance of the sociopath and the narcissist. You know, and I just kind of mapped that over. You know, the sociopath, that's Orwell. I mean, Aldous Huxley, that's the narcissist. And it seems like it's been a dance of death between those two things for a very long time.
I think you're absolutely right.
Putting out the narcissist who's getting what they want and, you know, and on it goes, but it just keeps getting worse. There's just a little piece of hope in my head that somehow we're going to push some sociopaths out of the way. I got to tell you, man, it's like,
I hope you're right.
You don't like them. But it's just, the problem is dealing with them, knowing who they are, you know, before they can do the damage. Just on a psychological level, before it even reaches the full-on social damage that goes on.
But this is, you know, this is button pushing, Grant. This is an attempt to, I believe this. It sounds crazy. You and I would, if we were sitting down, would never come up with this idea together. But it may very well be a deliberate attempt to drive people into the streets so that the ultimate crackdown can come. And you have no idea how I hate saying something like that, because it really makes it sound like that I need to shut the program down at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and put on my little aluminum foil helmet and start watching some Alex Jones movies.
I hear you, man. I tell you what, I live my life with my tin hat in full twirl most of the time these days. And it's not because I'm delusional, because I'm paying attention.
I bust my ass to keep it out, to not have one. I insist on having, you know, evidence and stuff. And
absolutely.
You know, I can't get down with chemtrails. I'm sorry. The NAFTA superhighway never did it for me.
On the boat, bat. Here we go. Yeah, I got it.
And I'm sorry, I'm not trying to piss anybody off, but I just can't. Because every time I see that kind of stuff, I start thinking about how many other things the really evil bastards can get away with while they've got people's attention diverted with spy versus spy stuff like that.
Yeah, when it's commoditized into entertainment.
Right, I mean, I don't.
It's what I call Conspiracy Inc.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a hillbilly. I'm not the least damn bit concerned about chemtrails because I don't have to be. They're poison. They are poisoning people here in this region, ostensibly legally, daily, and with the blessings of state government and to a certain extent the federal government. And the crap that goes into the air and into the water from the explosions and the blasting on a mountaintop removal site makes anything that Jeff Rentz has ever said is in a chemtrail pale by comparison.
I think good.
So, I'm sorry, I was preaching, and I apologize, Grant.
No, get it out, because you're right. What you're dealing with in your water supply is worse than most of the things you would think would be in a chemtrail. I mean, you know, I've been querying Lottie about what he knows about it and everything, and it's simply awful. But I just don't know where we're going to go from here. You know, This is
I hate to say it, but I think
I really feel like we've stepped through the looking glass. For all intents and purposes, I really feel like the constitutional government has come to an end. It's this sort of weird-ass inverted totalitarian shell that's going into.
Well, I think I agree with you, Grant, because it's like something that I used to say fairly frequently, and maybe should say more frequently again. When freedom ends, when a republic ends, they don't put up a blinking light saying freedom over, republic closed. Welcome to empire. It's a transitional thing. And because human memory is short and because human life is, for all intents and purposes, too short, we don't see it as it happens. And the people who do see it as it happens and are screaming from the battlements and the rooftops and the hilltops are often discounted.
Those loudmouths, just eat your Cheetos and sit on your ass.
Right, and if it gets to be troublesome enough, you give the FBI gives $500,000 contract to some the sleazy little outfit in Virginia. Yeah, I called you sleazy.
It's not our honor that's impugned here.
Right, to monitor for dangerous content. You know, Jesus, I'm a liberal. I'm a progressive, Grant. I'm not telling anybody to go to the barricades. I'm not telling anybody to get their guns.
Mm-hmm.
I'm encouraging people to be rational and very, very skeptical and very, very much engaged. Because people don't like, for instance, how Occupy is being treated. And as a consequence, what we might need here is a law that says, by God, we can do it. And there won't be any questions the next time that Officer Friendly uses a can of high-pressure pepper spray, highly pressurized chemical weapon to point-blank hose down nonviolent protesters, because federal government says we can do that.
You know, I try to keep my mind out of the rough neighborhood where this is going, but let's just take a walk around that block a little bit. You know, I've been watching this too, and these guys are utterly peaceful, nonviolent. They don't hurt anybody, and I have to agree with Mike Malloy. You know, a lot of us, I'm not committed to nonviolence like many much more savvy people are. Okay, I'm a more emotional person. When I see unarmed people getting roughed up, run over by horses, when they're trying to comply, when they stack the deck and then reshuffle and restack the deck, and they're brutally violent with you, now you notice it's always the police department that are the most fucking corrupt, that are the most brutal.
Yeah.
I'm right there with Mike Malloy. You know, there's going to come a time when people aren't going to put up with this shit. And here's the thing. We outnumber them thousands to one.
Well, no, see, there will be, and I'm not disagreeing with you or Mike, but I want you to understand the consequences, Grant. If you want to know what it's going to be, somewhere in this country, there will be a little Fallujah Bridge moment. You remember when the mercenary sleazebags got killed in Fallujah, and the outraged citizens thereof burnt their bodies and hanged the charred corpses from a bridge? Do you remember what happened to Fallujah after that?
Yep.
White phosphorus, outright stuff out of Roman history where they did everything but salt the earth.
Mm-hmm.
They turned Fallujah into a charnel house and did it gleefully. So yeah, that may happen here. And when it does, and this is why I remain absolutely and utterly committed to nonviolence, when that happens, the hell that will be unleashed indiscriminately upon people who had nothing to do with the event will be biblical in scope. Just sort of bear that in mind, Grant, and take it into account.
Well, I'll tell you what. Certainly,
because that's how fascists behave. And we are living in fascism.
I got you.
Now, on the other hand, it's kind of mind-blowing, but you got to give credit where credit is due. A member of the Senate, a Republican from Illinois, Mark Kirk, for whom I have seldom had any good to say, actually took to the floor of the Senate today to read the United States Constitution to his brother and sister senators. He said, "I took the time, as we all should from time to time serving in this body, to reread the Constitution of the United States yesterday." He said, "It appears that this legislation directly violates the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution with regard to those rights which are inalienable according to the Declaration of Independence." Now, in that regard, he is stone dead wrong. Because where, you know, I was discussing a little bit ago that the weirdos on the court say that the preamble is not the law of the land. Well, one of the darling talking points of the of the right wing is to refer to the Declaration of Independence as the law of the land, and it ain't even. It is a philosophical propaganda document and nothing more. So it does not violate the Declaration of Independence, because it is impossible to violate the Declaration of Independence. But the fact of the matter is, yes, it stomps all over the Fourth Amendment, but the Fourth Amendment is barely breathing as it is. It's Article 1, Section 9 where you have to get serious. Because if you're talking about indefinite detention under the National Defense Authorization Act, if you're talking about indefinite detention, then you are essentially talking about a broad sweeping suspension of habeas corpus. Of course, there are those, myself included, who would make the argument that habeas corpus was dealt a fatal blow back during the Bush administration, Grant, because of that piece of legislation that went through the House and Senate, saying, "Well, you know, we all love dear leader, and he can suspend habeas corpus if he farts wrong, and the court will uphold that." But at least Kirk, Senator Kirk, did stand up and say, "This is an outright violation of the Constitution that runs, or is presumed to run, our country," and it is. So, there you have it.
Quite a pickle.
Well, if you understand that we are living in the days of, we used to call it creeping fascism. It ain't creeping anymore, Grant.
I think it's jogging.
No, it's at a dead run with the bit in its teeth. And when you see people who are ostensibly progressives like Al Franken, Sheldon Whitehouse, Jack Reed, getting behind this vile business, you really kind of know that the fat lady has sung. Not is singing, has sung. Because there is no regard whatsoever remaining for the Constitution of the United States. And I will give props to President Obama for saying that he'll veto it. And I pray to God he's not lying to us. And I further pray, to the extent that I pray, Grant, that it's not a veto-proof majority. And Sandra was asking about whether it has to be reconciled. I got an email a little bit ago saying that the House version is even sicker and weirder than anything they've considered in the Senate. And that's sobering.
It's been the crazy train, doesn't it?
Yeah. And, I won't live my life in fear.
You know, I made that same decision, too. I really did. You know, when the pinch point comes so dire like that, there's really no way to sustain that and process that, hold that fear. Something has to be done with it.
And understand as well, Grant, that legislation like this is actually born of their fear. They are so entrenched and so sickeningly addicted to wallowing in their money filth that they are actively afraid of the people of the United States. Because they know now that the rubber mask is off, and we know who they are, who they work for, who they legislate for, who they represent, and what they ultimately intend. And because we know that, that 9%, that Congress that 91% of the American people despises is showing us how it feels about us, about the blood that was shed to create this country and sustain this country and everything that this country is, Grant. So,
well, I'll tell you what, if I end up in a kulag with you guys, I'll consider myself in good company.
Southwest Guard Tower. We'll be there.
All right.
selling cigarettes and stuff.
Right.
Talk to you later, Grant. Good talking to you.
Bye.
I'm not trying to be all dark and creepy or anything. But when you read history and you know history, as many of you know far better than I, and you refuse to extrapolate the lessons of history into the present and into the future, then it's just as well that you didn't learn it. It is as if you didn't learn it. And I refuse to hide any longer and not proclaim as loudly as I can that we are dealing with fascism. And we need to understand that fascism isn't just something that Italians do, or Germans, or Japanese. That fascism will arise any time you allow the machinery of government to be overtaken and subsumed by the massive financial power of business and corporations, immortals that they are. In particular. Just saying. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston.
Well, a few things going on. Wonderful discussion, and as the philosopher John Dewey said, democracy begins in conversation, and so as intimidating as this stuff can feel at times, people not wanting to be surveilled and recorded and all that stuff, I don't know. I think our best defense is to keep talking. So I so appreciate the horn and its participants.
If one of those little sleazy government contractors hired by the FBI is listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to, because I want them to hear what freedom sounds like.
Yeah, and let's talk to everybody. You know, some people just kind of stumble into the FBI themselves, and they're not, true believers in the almighty state, corporate state, or military state. And some are going to get paid off. Some are going to be collaborators. But some are more flexible, I think. There have been people like Philip Agee and John Stockwell, I think is his name. They worked for the CIA, involved in all kinds of nasty business. They eventually couldn't do it anymore and joined the people. So, and I've seen this in other countries.
Yeah, Ray McGovern.
Yeah, good example. The Philippines had some revolution going on, and people were in the streets, and they had military helicopters over their heads, and they had certainly seen plenty of times when those gunships provided by the U.S. opened fire on people like them. But this documentary I saw years ago, it showed the military helicopters, you know, buzzing them, and then eventually the pilots just landed their choppers in a field nearby and joined the people, and it was a beautiful thing to see. So, and if we can simply stop kind of fragging each other, I think that would be a huge step forward. Just kind of working on our own solidarity. For instance, right now here in Denver, a very good local progressive host, Mario Solis Marish, just got bounced by Clear Channel for Norman Goldman, who I think is great. And I think Mario is great. But I'm reading Mario's Facebook page, and the war has begun. You know, people who like Mario and people who hate Norman. And you know,
oh, I know. But there, if there's a takeaway from that, Preston, is it's the fact that it'll last about a week, because the radio station made a business decision, probably,
yeah,
and doesn't give a damn what its listeners think, and they also know that ultimately the listeners will listen to whatever they put up there.
Yeah, some are saying they're going to boycott it. You know, who knows?
And they might, but it's not. Yeah. But it's not going to have enough force and effect to make it painful, because among other things. And maybe this is me thinking a little too much of my own knowledge, they'll do it wrong. You know, maybe they'll pick it outside the radio station. Big deal. The radio station will love that, because the Denver Post or whatever will come and take pictures and write a story about how, and there's no such thing as bad publicity, right? The way you do it, if these people want to, is you listen and you write down who's advertising,
yeah,
local advertisers, because the nationals don't give a damn. And you go to, you know, Fred's Texaco free car wash with Philip on Saturdays, and you say, I want to talk to Fred. Fred, you're advertising on such and such, and they just took off my favorite host, and you know what? I'm going to tell all my friends not to come here until you quit advertising on that radio station.
Yeah, that kind of thing might be going on, too. I suggested they create some space on the weekends. You know, a lot of that stuff is kind of the paid infomercials that go for a half hour or an hour or whatever. And, you know, why not people chip in and get Mario a couple spots there? They have some great weekend programming. Jesse Jackson's show.
Yeah.
Keep Hope Alive. Very good. And also Ring of Fire, which I also enjoy.
That is a magnificent program.
Yes, definitely, definitely. What else? And you've mentioned, it's the dynamic. Grant was mentioning emotional intelligence. Someone he knew was kind of exploring that. And, you know, I think that's actually kind of a subversive field, because as I listen to Rush Limbaugh and so much of that kind of vitriolic, combative stuff, it's like the opposite of what they're talking about in emotional intelligence, kind of being more open instead of rigid and, you know, attacking and condescending. God, I was listening to Limbaugh today, and he made some remark about Barney Frank, something about, oh, he was on Hardball, and Rush says,
oh, God.
You know, Hardball. I wonder if Barney Frank likes the name of that show. It's just like the.
Yeah, well, you know, Flush is a case of arrested development. And he has the sense of humor of a 13-year-old, and that's probably insulting to most 13-year-olds.
Yeah, and his writers. I mean, we were talking about collaborators, and he's certainly a media collaborator. And I think a lot of this stuff that he's talking, what he's saying, his emotions, it's all being directed. You know, he's got writers, probably theater coaches. He also has this habit of pounding the table at certain points. There's a lot going on, sometimes very subtly on that show, but anyway, it's a model of emotional unintelligence and what Marshall Rosenberg would call violent communication.
Yes.
And so anyway, again, back to the importance of conversation. And, you know, I did want to bring up something that I've been a little uncomfortable with. And, you know, to me, when I watch Ed Schultz and I hear him discussed on this, on your show, it's like I'm watching a different show. I see this guy day after day talking to union people, working class people, interviewing people like Dennis Kucinich, giving Laura Flanders a spot, doing a lot of good work. But because he's done a couple things we don't like, he's getting entirely dismissed.
That's not entirely where I come from, Preston.
I'm not saying you, but
it has to do, at least on my end, with having a sense of what the guy's really like.
Me too. And I've spoken with him a couple times. He's been fair enough to give me time, but go ahead.
And
if GQ's dissing him, that's probably a badge of honor.
Well,
I see what their main concerns are, you know, and it's not labor.
No, that's for sure. But by the same token, I'll ask this, and you know, I take your criticisms very, very seriously, Preston. I do, because we've been talking for a very long time, and I consider you a friend. But Ed Schultz, and this is maybe this is my own emotional unintelligence. Ed Schultz gives me the creeps. Okay, I can't watch him. I have tried.
I understand.
I can't.
Not everyone's cup of tea.
Well, it's not just that he's not my cup of tea. There is something coming from him that makes me physically uncomfortable. I feel like I'm, well, I'm not going to say anything because that would be even uglier. But he just gives off this vibe that, whew, and that's probably colored because I've seen how he behaves. I've seen, you know, I have seen him when he has acted like some sort of media royalty. And that is not how a populist behaves.
Yeah, he made fun of David Sirota at one point, and Sirota's been replaying that moment on his show regularly. You know, he was like, what's this guy's name? Sirota? Sirati? You know, he's kind of pretending he didn't know his name.
Yeah.
You know.
It's childish.
You know, there were those moments. Again,
I remember
with him. I think he's flawed, makes mistakes, but I'm like that.
We all are. We all are. But I remember when he... When that effort was going forward to have progressive radio in Arizona, Preston.
Uh-huh.
And people were literally... Well, they were doing the same thing they do to keep the horn on the air. You know, they were literally giving $5 and $10 to keep progressive broadcasting alive in Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
And Ed took to the airwaves to sneer down his nose at them, and he said... Well, that'll never go. That's not professional broadcasting. That's bake sale radio.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that's a populist? Has Ed ever been to a bake sale, Preston? Because I have, and I've seen the young women from the cheer squad at our middle school whose mamas bake cookies so that they can have new uniforms, or the same thing with a football team, or the VFW, or I've seen when they sell little paper poppies on Memorial Day or Veterans Day. I've seen that, and I will never, 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 Preston, look down my nose at it. But the populist, pro-union, pro-people guy did. And like I said, it's entirely possible it's a character flaw. My dad, back in 1948, and I think I've told this story before, but back in 1948, the president of GM said that the working man was no better than a coon hound. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was a working man. And from that day forward, he vowed he would never, ever, ever own another General Motors product.
Yeah. All right.
And we suffered through a lot of Chryslers, Preston.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it may be a character flaw on my part.
Yeah, but
in Washington State, when he called Mike Malloy an anti-Semite.
Right, right. And again, but he has open lines and he welcomes calls of dissent. And that'd be great to say a few words about mountaintop removal and all that kind of thing on a show. And Alan Colmes, too. I mean, he's got like wide open lines. And Alan Colmes is another person who regularly gets dismissed and stories about.
Well, I actually have a higher opinion of Alan than I do of Ed, but
yeah.
I mean, it takes something to sit there and take and at least have the guts to hand it back to Hannity for years on end. I have some respect for
that. There's that.
He wasn't the doormat, and I've used the word doormat, and for that I apologize. But he wasn't the doormat that he was made out to be. I live in a progressive radio dead zone, so I don't get to listen to Alan. I don't have Sirius or anything like that.
Yeah, and again, I'm certainly not dismissing your concerns and criticisms of Ed, but again, I think 95% of what he does is wonderful. He interviewed Van Jones recently, you know, and again, his show is about more than just Ed. So if we're dissing Ed, we're also dissing a platform for Van Jones, a platform for Kucinich, a platform for
I don't necessarily see it that way. I want Van Jones to have a platform. I want Kucinich to have a platform. I applaud
that. And they'd say it's a sympathetic and supportive one, and they appreciate the work that he's doing. So whatever foul opinions we may have.
And you know what? I know that a comparative audience size, I know that I'm certainly not everybody's cup of tea, and I may be pissing off people in the Horn audience by saying I don't care for Ed.
That's another thing. You know, that's another thing, Ed. I mean, I could hear people saying the same sorts of arguments against you.
Sure.
You know, he said this thing that a feminist might be upset by, or cursed, or gets angry, or, you know, whatever. So I'd want you to be treated.
Sure, absolutely.
Bob Kincaid Beacon.
But it's also a very you can't do this if you do not have alligator hide.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And definitely. And callers too. I mean, a lot of people, they won't say anything. They'll just criticize. But as far as putting it out there in public, it's pretty rare. I think people are, you know, fear of public speaking and all that stuff. Again, it's not everyone's cup of tea. It's, you know, we all have our different approaches to stuff, speaking our piece or whatever. But putting it aside real quickly, I don't want to take up too much
let me just say one thing, and that is, though I don't particularly care for him, I have always maintained, and I will continue to maintain, and I will not deviate from the position that I've always taken, that the world, the nation benefits by more progressive talk, more progressive conversation, more progressive-oriented information, and not less of it.
Yeah.
I want more of it, because at the end of the day, I always recognize that for every hour of, and it remains a fact, it hasn't changed since this statistic came out, for every hour of anything that Ed or Tom Hartman or Malloy or Stephanie Miller or Randy Rhodes or any of them do, there are 1,000 hours of right wing filth.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But you know, I don't understand where somebody like Ed, not too long ago, and you may have even heard it, he had a guy on for a PR guy for fracking. And just sat there and let him throw and just sat there and threw him softballs.
Yeah, you know, I don't think he's got all the info on all the stuff. So
I will disagree, Preston. I think he has all the info he needs, because you see, big labor wants fracking.
Fracking, right.
So, big yeah, labor
there are these
wanted.
Convictions and these battles within progressive, you know, different sectors of progressive people.
Yeah, big labor badly wanted the Keystone XL pipeline and are still advocating in its favor.
But I have to say, from an industry standpoint, PR standpoint, I wonder how good a job, say, the wind industry is doing to get some time with Ed Schultz or the solar power people. I don't think they are doing a relative to the voices that he must have coming at him from the coal industry in a variety of forms. I wonder. So, you know,
I mean, I've heard him. I've heard Ed have a clean coal guy on.
You know, but there again, he's also had Van Jones on, and Van Jones addresses that stuff as particularly as anybody, and so he'll let Van Jones kind of do the talking on that subject. And I noticed more during his show, he'll just let callers call in, and he'll sit back and he'll just listen. That in itself is, again, beyond the political policy issues. There's manners of kind of carrying ourselves and relating and listening to people that can be move us forward. And I think he does that today. He had two callers from United Airlines, a baggage guy and a pilot, talking about how they are being completely ripped off by these executives and these, oh, we got to declare bankruptcy and take half your pension and take your benefits and you got to work more and there's going to be less help and on and on and on. And these guys were just telling their story, and it was so, I mean, this story.
And those people, oh, Jesus, did I just say those people? There needs to be an outlet for these stories to get out.
And Ed was it. Power flawed, he made that happen. And it's been a buried story for so long, and he just...
And of course, there's a big screwing coming for the American Airlines employees.
That's right. But in another kind of untraditional move for talk radio, commercial talk radio, Ed was like, "Hold on, whatever his name was, I want to talk more to you," and didn't cut him off at the break. They came right back. So it was a great day for I think Schultz, and I'm a big fan. Someone I'm not a fan of, and you've mentioned him also a couple times, and Alex Jones and his whole network. You were talking about the chemtrails. It's like they've got us, you know, I'm not sure. It's hard to follow some of it. I'd even concede they probably are putting stuff up there that won't surprise me.
Me either.
But on the other hand, you made that so important point. It's like you're seeing it, it's right in front of you, you know, and so it doesn't, you know, it's almost like a diversion, like, hey, look up in the sky.
Well, I mean, here, let me be just crystal clear. Alex Jones is a huckster, okay? He's a hustler. You know, for 8 years of George Bush, by God, he almost sounded like a progressive, didn't he? And then, lo and behold, here comes Barack Obama,
right.
And he's right back there with the militia gang that gave that gave him suck at birth.
Yeah. Hey, and I noticed missing from the conversation, even if I do believe in the chemtrail stuff, it's like I'm rarely, if ever, hearing from these people. Word one about the known millions and millions and millions of tons of chemicals being dumped, not up in the sky, but on our food and in our waterways.
Yes.
Atrazine itself.
Right. And but you know, if you can be diverted to worrying about about the exhaust trails from a jet airliner.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you know what? You're not gonna worry about the chemicals on our food. And not so much for you, but maybe for somebody who might not be thinking this way, here's the giveaway. If you hear somebody talking about something, and they get up to a certain point, Preston, and they say, "And if you want more, go to my website, and for $19.95, buy my DVD."
Yeah. Well, you talked about possibly curling up to some Alex Jones movies, and kind of joking about it. They've been being passed out big time at Occupy Denver. I'm seeing people with bags and bags of the DVDs. So there's a sales part of it, but there's also a free distribution part of it. And I've watched some of these DVDs, and there's a lot of muddling of issues going on. There's some stuff they're saying that I agree with, but any con man is going to say agree on some of your topics. But then it goes off in these other directions. And he has a habit, and the whole Prison Planet group has this very consistent habit of going after, like, every progressive person and many of their causes. For instance, Noam Chomsky, Jones called a low-grade moron. Now, I think the best part of Jones's stuff, it seems, plucked right out Chomsky's work. But then he turns around and attacks him. He attacks Howard Zinn. He attacks Amy Goodman. He attacks Chip Berlay.
I just can't get him to attack me.
People can do a search. Today I thought of another organization that's doing really worthwhile work. You know, Jones and his group pretend to be so concerned about our freedom. Well, the leading organization that's really in the trenches, doing the lawsuits, all that stuff, the ACLU. I just punched in Alex Jones on the ACLU, APA Prison Planet, an article. It wasn't written by Jones. It's one of his helpers. And it's about how the ACLU is so terrible and what they're the biggest threat to freedom, and on and on and on. So,
and see, there's such a parallel there, Preston, because I can remember when Limbaugh used to go at the ACLU hammer and tongs.
Mm-hmm.
My friends, it is a communist front organization, the ACLU.
He still
does. American Communist Liberty. He still does? Because he shut up about him for a long time after they pulled his bacon out of the fire in the doctor shopping case.
They did do that. They protected his medical records, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, the ACLU has also done some stuff for churches. You know, they're always being framed as, oh, they won't let so-and-so pray or whatever, or do a sermon over the intercom or whatever. But sometimes they help extend the rights of churches here and there.
Look, I mean, the ACLU stepped in to defend the Nazis being able to march in Skokie. Theirs is a dirty business. And I say dirty not because there's anything underhanded in what they do, but because they defend the Constitution as opposed to the people exercising the rights, then they are by definition going to get into some dirty areas. Who wants to...
Yeah.
And I think, if I recall correctly, it was a Jewish lawyer for the ACLU who defended the Nazis' right to march in Skokie.
Okay, yeah, yeah. By the way, the president of the ACLU, Susan Herman, brilliant lady, who I just learned the name of, you know. I mean, if a group's constantly being attacked by the right wing, that's a group that we should most likely be very
right.
knowledgeable of and supportive of. And
well, it's like that quote from Mark Kirk, okay? On the one hand, you're going, yay, Mark Kirk. Okay, you're a Republican. You know, all things are forgiven. You spoke up for the Constitution. But lo and behold, if you drill down into it, he's still sitting there advancing an absolutely obnoxious meme. And, wow, if only the Free Republic people could hear me say that. It is, and that obnoxious meme, Preston, is that the Declaration of Independence is law. Because, you know what? If the Declaration of Independence is law, then we get to go out and kill Indians some more.
Right, and we're doing that in Afghanistan and Iraq. You know, it's very much a continuation of the Indian Wars in some ways, you know, going after tribal people whose culture we dismiss as savage and get their resources. Just a couple days ago here in Colorado, it was the anniversary of the Sand Creek Massacre, which is about 150 miles south of here.
Yep, Colonel...
Shivington.
Yep.
They actually paraded through the streets of Denver with, body parts, and the Rocky Mountain News wrote a...
And, of course, he is the man who gave us the phrase, nits make lice, kill them all.
Yep, yep. And, you know, it's we're marching on to other Indian parts of Indian country. And then all the indigenous people in the Amazon and, well, now in Canada, the First Nations there being made refugees.
Yeah.
On kind of long marches to reserves. You know, that tar sands development, you know, there's one campaign against it, and it's calling it the Avatar Sands development.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. In that film, Avatar, if people haven't seen it, you know, there again, I thought was a hugely important cultural thing, and certainly worthy. There are critiques of it and criticisms that I share. It employed a couple of Hollywood conventions, big action scene blow-up thing at the end, and there are some other aspects to it.
A noble white man who has to save the ignorant savages. Don't forget that one.
There's that. There is that. On the other hand, the positive, the helpful things that it...
Oh, sure. I mean,
the
like...
The narrative itself is...
We sat there and watched it in 3D... And the minute the bay door opens in that opening scene, and there's that big yellow caterpillar thing with, you know, with four-story tall tires, I couldn't help myself. I went, holy shit, it's mountaintop removal.
Right,
and
exactly.
This theater full of people, it seemed like every last one of them turned around and went, shh.
Oh, I'm glad you said something. That's great. And around the world, there have been these resource struggles going on, and... time and again, the indigenous people have been like painting, they're using blue makeup and kind of dressing.
Yeah,
as the
and it's
the,
worth
the
remembering.
Nazi.
You know, there. I think we've formulated two corollaries here on the Horn now, Preston. One of them is they want it all, and the second and corollary to that is, and what you will not give them, they will by God take.
Yeah,
and what you're describing. Is prima facie evidence of that. And like I said in the conversation with Sandra, the 1% are marshaling their resources and marshaling all the wealth they can because it is getting ready to... And again, I'm not trying to get all Alex Jonesy. It's getting ready to fall apart because it's not unsustainable in the future. It's unsustainable now. And the fact of the matter is that whole, you know, you see it on bumper stickers here and there, live simply so that others may simply live.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes a tremendous amount of the energy that is generated, and I'm not even talking about hydrocarbons, it's psychic energy, soul energy, physical energy, personal energy. It takes a tremendous amount of energy to make sure that Americans can live as highly as Americans do live. And it requires, because there is a dot-to-dot link, it requires people to starve to death in Haiti, in Somalia, in AIDS-ravaged Africa. You know, we have, I mean, no matter how progressive or liberal or well-intended we are all part of this noxious system.
I do think we can live abundantly, though.
Yes.
More justly and sustainably. You know, often the argument is that, well, it's inevitable, but, you know, we rarely use the word evitable, and these predicaments are evitable. We see not just the vision of something more decent, but we can look to our past. When there are things like mass transit, you know, people they like to move.
Right. In my
have to be individualized and
In my email conversation with John over that heroic story out of Binghamton, New York, where you know a New York progressive mayor is going to save the lives of 11 families that he doesn't even have to think about because they're in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
In discussing that story, I said, you know, ultimately the law always finds it. This is a failure of the law because the families whose water was destroyed should, you know, they went through the PA Department of Environmental Protection when in fact the courts exist precisely to protect the property rights of people because the Constitution, as it was established, Preston, is about property. It was created by white men of property to protect the property of white men. And they can't, and you know, and yet these 11 families are going through the some sort of claims court process in the PA Department of Environmental Protection. Why is the law so far behind in terms of of things? And maybe it's not behind. It's just it's been overturned, overruled, whatever. Nuisance. And the earliest form of civil complaint going back to merry oldie England was something called trespass and trespass on the case. And they deal specifically with the issues that are raised by things like mountaintop removal and by fracking. And the courts are not there. And it is a failure, and this is what I said to John in our correspondence, it is not just a legal failure, it is a Western legal failure, because as Texas Betsy has pointed out to me, in ancient Hebraic law, there is a reference to how many generations one may hang on to wealth. The Iroquois nations law about not doing things that extend out more than seven generations. There are ways to build these systems. But because white Western European power has always been about ownership and control, that's the primary concern.
And the real wealth is, clean air, clean water, our health,
Bobby Kennedy identifies as the commons so eloquently in the early parts of The Last Mountain. And by the way, the Academy Award nominations will be coming out soon. And I've never cared about them before. But I'm sitting here crossing my fingers hoping that The Last Mountain gets nominated for an Academy Award. It's a distinct possibility.
And I'm thinking, that sort of movie, and The Inside Job and The Corporation and so many others are the ones that need to be copied in bulk and passed out at the Occupy get-togethers. DVDs are such a powerful communication tool. And I was listening to the CD version of Michael Moore's autobiography, and he mentioned a film from about 30 years ago called The Atomic Cafe, and it was about the complete madness of our nuclear weapons establishment and the waste and destruction of communities and the people dying downwind. We bombed Nevada, these tests, 100 times. They estimate tens of thousands of people in Nevada and Utah died from being downwind. It wasn't the Russians attacking us, it was us destroying our own ecosystems, causing all these cancers. It wasn't Al-Qaeda with a dirty bomb, it was us. And we're gearing up to drill more uranium, or as Avatar would call it, the unobtainium.
Right.
Which is technically actually an actual word. I looked it up on Wikipedia, and it's actually a term they use in mining for a substance that's difficult to get to or something like that.
Right. Oh, and by the way, Preston, breaking news. This just came across. Patty in North Dakota just sent this to me. She said, well, it looks like Levin and McCain et al. Have gotten away with it. Now, do you believe that President Not Sure will really veto? She says, I really want to leave this country that I do not any longer recognize. Breaking news, Senate approves defense spending bill.
Yeah. But, I have to say, I think there's the same mindset and efforts. I don't know, like Sandra was saying, I had always kind of assumed that stuff I put out on the Internet is being monitored, and things I say on the phone. In fact, I know it for a fact. A few years ago during the WTO and the World Bank protests, around 2000, I was involved with some groups, the Radical Quakers and other civic groups and church groups, and word got around that the Denver police were keeping files on all of us, and they were called the spy files. And the ACLU again, sued to get the files released, and everyone who had one received their file. And, again, it spooked some people. There's a spooky invasiveness to it. It also...
it's the same thing that happens when you come home and you find out your house has been burglarized. Even if you weren't in the house, there is an unavoidable sense, Preston, that you have been violated.
Yeah, yeah.
And frankly, I feel violated by what just happened in the Senate. I mean, I feel, yeah. It was a long time ago that our buddy Reverbo referred us to that passage from Richard K. Morgan's Altered Carbon and said, make it personal. And you know what? I'm making it personal. This is a personal affront, a personal assault on the liberties that I myself own and possess, and my family as well. And I'm not going to take it lying down.
And I guess the point I was kind of making, or I don't know, just a thought, not so much a point. Indefinite detention, it's been going on in so many ways for so long. I mean, we have tens of thousands of people in jail and prisons. Even if they're out, they often have ankle bracelets. And what are they in for?
Well, yeah, I'm trying to think. I had a reference, a link to a post over, and it's fairly critical of the Occupy movement, but I had a link to a post from Matt Osborne, and he referenced a tweet by a comedian, and I'm desperately trying to find it here. It won't take me. Oh, here it is. The post had a tweet in it, and this goes to the very heart of what you just mentioned. He said he thought that the best. He references the fact this article that came out that said, African Americans are not much interested in Occupy. And he referenced a tweet from comedian Elon James, who tweeted, "Oh, the police are treating you badly? Violent for no reason? Weird. Signed, black people."
Yeah, yeah. And on the other hand, you know, it's a mix. The communities, it's a mix. In Brooklyn, I have a Facebook friend, and she's made me aware of some efforts among people who to build alliances with the Occupy movement.
Right, but look where that allegation comes from, Preston. It comes from the 1% media. It has been declared, handed down from on high by the Washington Post that African Americans aren't interested in Occupy. Well, you know what? We've got a sizable audience of color, I guess is the appropriate phrase. And I'm not getting a lot of mail saying, I'm black and I ain't into Occupy. I'm getting, I support Occupy. By the way, I just had an email in from Texas Betsy who said, please tell Preston that there are dozens of Alex Jonesians here at Occupy Austin as well. And, you know, it's hard to avoid the idea. You were talking about some of his stuff being given away. There are some phrases that just transcend all sorts of transactions, and here's the query. You know, they're handing out Alex Jones at Occupy in Denver. Well, you know, hey kid, the first one's free. You know.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I think he also has a tendency to just cultivate anxiety and fear. Not that there isn't scary stuff going on, and I know a lot of what I say might. You concern people,
and I really do think that. I mean, we know for a fact that there was an $850,000 PR contract hit put out on Occupy. We know that the Paulistas have to a certain extent tried to insinuate themselves into Occupy.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and Jones will also warn people, you know, don't let so-and-so, they're going to try to co-opt you, like labor unions. So it's like he's getting people prepared to be like anti-union. And it's to me, it's key that labor is involved with this. You know, the major march that really got the media couldn't ignore it anymore was when the unions, the SEIU and the transit workers, I guess it was the transit workers union got involved. It's totally key. That's what the whole, you know, labor and justice for labor is what the movement's.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so he's pitting us. He's like, hey, watch out over there. And again, I think he's the co-optation. I think he is the inside job, actually.
And you know, Darlene just wrote in, Preston, and she said, Alex Jones is also attacking Occupy. He can't stand being upstaged by anything or anyone. Technically, with the current track he is on now that Obama is president, You would think he should be in support of Occupy, but he can't handle being upstaged in any way, so he has to try to co-opt or delegitimize Occupy by saying it should focus solely on doing away with the Fed. He plays this game constantly. And, of course, do away with the Fed is straight out of Ron Paul's little red book.
And again, you know, there are elements of truth to it. I won't totally dismiss it, but you know,
no,
Bernie Sanders, his critique of
Look at the legislation that Dennis Kucinich just introduced to bring the Fed within the purview of the Treasury.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes some sense. You know, you get your whole audit the Fed. It's no longer an external corporate entity, you know, that kind of thing. Preston, I hate to do it, but I got to get out of here because we are running up against it. But this has been a magnificent conversation, and I really appreciate it.
I enjoyed it very much, and peace and good night to everybody.
All right, take care, Preston. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
The Horns resident optimist, that's Preston calling from Denver, wanted to hit a couple of emails that had come in based on some of the topics, and Darlene's was one of them. Some of the topics that Preston raised. Sandra wrote in and said, the best Ed show is when Mike Papantonio is subbing. And Papantonio is magnificent. She says, sorry, I'm not a fan. Ed is a pompous, self-important, thin-skinned egomaniac with dubious connections to the Democratic Party. Then Patty also wrote in, and Patty's got some history here because Ed comes from the same neck of the woods, and, well, up in North Dakota, everybody knows everybody. Patty says Preston just doesn't know who Ed is. He still comes back to Fargo Studios once in a while and fills in on his old North Dakota local show, and guess what? He is flatulating all of his old right-wing BS. He knows no one who matters will be listening. Ed is a multimillionaire, and it is all about the dollars, period. She also says, as for Mario Solis' marriage, people in Denver are upset mostly because Mario is a local host, and they like that a lot. It's not that they don't like Norm. I know it's... she says, no, it's all Nunya for me, but I had to stick my nose in. No, it's not Nunya, Patty. This is conversation radio, and it can happen in writing. It can happen via the phones. It can happen in the chat room. But, to the extent that somebody is local, I can see that... But, of course, as Preston notes, people get walled off into a... him, not him, kind of, and that is counterproductive. Ray writing in, Schultz has a very dark cloud over him, very disturbing emptiness there, aside, of course, for a bully hatred of truth and light. Wow. Let's see here. Hey, welcome to the program, just real quick.
I just want to make it quick. It's Mark calling in.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Bob. Just a couple labor groups. I think the operating engineers supported the XL pipeline. Those are only 20,000 jobs. The carpenters, which would do a lot of the hand forming of the high-speed rail, a lot of concrete pouring, would be union laborers. Those are 2 million jobs, just for the listener's point. When I went to the Obama inauguration, I stayed at Quantico and actually rode the elevator down with the representation from the Coast Guard. They were all big guys of different ethnicities for the national colors that the Coast Guard, we're all in the same elevator. In any case, one kid was from Florida, but who did I run into in Washington, D.C. amongst the crowd of 4 million was a congressman from Illinois, and I said, hey, you're from Illinois, aren't you? And he said, well, yeah. And to me, he was kind of a little guy. I'd never seen him in person. I kind of patted him on his shoulder. I said, well, you know, I'm from Illinois, too. And I said, we're in charge now, motherfucker. And I said, you don't like Abraham Lincoln. And I said, we Democrats love Abraham Lincoln, and you just use Abraham Lincoln. And that's the difference between a real Illinoisan. And that was Mark Kirk, by the way. And as far as the FBI, when I was on embassy duty, I had one friend go on to become a JAG officer in the Marine Corps, lieutenant colonel retiree. I have one friend that is a fucking FBI agent, another friend that's a sergeant with Miami Police, which I mentioned last night. And I'm not bragging. I probably could run with that crowd, but I chose. And for the listeners, if the FBI is listening, which, like yourself, I hope that they are, they will become criminalistic if they're not already by defending the 1%ers, which are criminals. So they'll have to get on our side. And that's all I can say, Bob. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Take care. Well, auctioneer style, for real. Time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Join, be a part of the solution for Appalachia, and always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next, only on the Horn.